General answered their questions, and some have called on him to resign. While President Bush said Gonzalez's testimony, quote, increased my confidence in his ability. At the White House today, President Bush met with top U.S. military leaders, including General David Petraeus, the top commander in Iraq. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has ordered a stop to the construction of a 3-mile-long wall. This is the Quality News Network. President Bush has expressed his strong support for embattled Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who has vowed to stay on the job. Gonzalez testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee last week to try to explain the reason why 8 U.S. attorneys were recently fired. Many Democratic and Republican lawmakers criticized the way the Attorney General answered their questions, and some have called on him to resign. While President Bush said Gonzalez's testimony, quote, increased my confidence in his ability. At the White House today, President Bush met with top U.S. military leaders, including General David Petraeus, the top commander in Iraq. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has ordered a stop to the construction of a 3-mile-long wall that would separate Sunnis and Shiites in a Baghdad neighborhood. American officials say they will go along with the Prime Minister's wishes. In Iraq today, at least 46 people were killed in several violent attacks by suicide bombers. A British soldier was killed in southern Iraq today. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid expects to pass legislation in the next few days to fund the Iraq war and also require a troop pullout to begin October 1st. He wants the U.S. military to stop, quote, policing a civil war. President Bush has repeatedly threatened to veto any spending bill that also contains a troop pullout date. Former Russian President Boris Yeltsin has died in Moscow at the age of 76. He was the first post-Soviet leader elected in 1991, at the time the Soviet Union fell apart. He was also the first leader to freely give up power when he left office at the end of 1999. Yeltsin suffered from health problems over the years. Classes have resumed on the Virginia Tech campus 1 week after the deadliest school and mass shooting in U.S. history. 32 students and professors were killed by a student gunman who killed himself as well. In France, there will be a runoff election between the top two vote-getters in Sunday's presidential election. Conservative candidate Nicolas Sarkozy and socialist Ségolène Royal will compete against each other in the May 6th vote. Chinese state television reports that the country's president has begun a campaign to remove, quote, unhealthy content from the internet. Additionally, he plans to make it a springboard for Communist Party doctrine and propaganda. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Attention business owners. Getting new customers is now just one click away. Sounds too good to be true, right? Well, you got us. It's actually two clicks away with the new MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com is more than an online yellow pages. It's an interactive gateway that connects customers with your business, all in just two clicks. Why continue to pay thousands of dollars on an antique advertising medium, especially one that ends up going into the recycling bin? Make the smart upgrade at only a fraction of the cost. Try for yourself. MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com will put your business in the radar of thousands of potential customers. They'll be able to make reservations online, even print out the map with directions, all in just two clicks. Call 1-800-505-1883 today to find out more about this great new service. The sooner you do, the faster your cash register will start to ring. The number again is 1-800-505-1883. MyLocalYP.com.
The small Texas panhandle town of Cactus was hit hard by a group of tornadoes this weekend. At least 14 people were injured. All the residents of the town have now been accounted for. NASA scientists released 3D images of the sun that will help them track powerful solar eruptions and learn how they may affect Earth. British pharmaceutical maker AstraZeneca is buying MedImmune, a U.S. biotech drug maker, for $15.6 billion. Former Washington Post reporter Carl Bernstein will publish a 640-page biography of Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton in June. The book will have a first printing of 350,000 copies. Over the past 2 weeks, the price of gasoline has gone up 8 cents a gallon. Now the average price nationwide for a gallon of unleaded gasoline is $2.87, according to the Lundberg survey. In Norway, three men who stole and damaged two Edvard Munch masterpieces, The Scream and Madonna, were sentenced today. They each face between 5.5 and 9.5 years in prison and will pay a $262 million fine. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.89 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 43 points, the NASDAQ was down 3, and the S&P 500 also down 3. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay! Don't you!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
I think everything works again tonight. You know, that's extremely, extremely bad for one's concentration to be sitting there prattling along and just have everything go like it did last night. But it did, and there was nothing we could do about it. And you want to know what happened? I'll tell you what happened. The computer that we use to, and this is all it does. I mean, it doesn't play solitaire. It doesn't keep track of the eBay products that I'm following. It doesn't do anything but send a stream. And in the middle of the show, with Agnes not touching it and with me not touching it, nobody was touching it. No touching. Inside the start, control panel, sound and audio devices. And then you go to the recording input, and, you know, there's a mixer slide there, a slide pot. With no one touching it, it turned itself down. I kid you not. Really and for true. Nobody'll believe it, Agnes. Nobody'll believe it, but it is true.
We found that out at 2 o'clock in the morning.
And, yeah, we had a long night finding that out. Screwed up a lot of scheduling. Fortunately, we were able to rebuild some of it. We will be joined tomorrow night by Anthony Lowenstein, author of My Israel Question. You can go to myisraelquestion.com and find out more about the book. It's available at Amazon. And tonight, I believe we will hear sometime in the second hour, right after the top of the hour, we will hear from our good friend Brad Friedman with regard to developments in the attempt to clean up the electoral process in this country vis-a-vis the disgusting vote-stealing machines that have been installed all over this once great nation. And a special treat for you at just shortly after the top of the... Brad Friedman, third hour. Second hour, just shortly after 7 p.m. Eastern time, shortly after 4 p.m. West Coast time, Pacific time, we'll be having a little conversation with a musician, an artist, a writer by the name of John Kuntz, whose new album, It Can Never Happen Here, is already on the shelves in the Portland area and shortly available for your purchase outside the area. And we'll play you a couple of cuts from the album, talk to John about what motivated him to write them. I think you're going to be tickled to pieces. And one song in particular on the disc, as far as I'm concerned, has potential to become the the anthem of protest to this god-awful war. And you will hear that as well. So all of that is coming up. Your phone calls are also welcome. You know that. I want to talk to you just a little bit about. You know, we need to talk about the phone. We have grown immensely in the year and a half that we've been on the air. Tremendously. Most nights, the six lines that we maintain for folks to call in on stay lit up from start to finish. And to a certain extent, this sort of builds further cost into what it takes for us to run the network. No, this is not a fundraising pitch. I promised you I will not, and I will not beg for money. But when I keep you sitting on hold, I cost us money, because that's generally on the toll-free line, 877-443-2366. Frankly, it's 6 cents a minute. So, at the suggestion of a couple of people, we've begun mentioning it on the network in earlier programming, and I'm going to mention it here as well, and I'm going to ask for your help to a certain extent. You know, a lot of people around the country have unlimited long-distance calling plans, whether it be on their cell phone or on their residential service. And if you do, I want to give you a different number if you want to call the program. And that is 304, area code 304-658-5453. 304-658-5453. If you've got one of those unlimited calling plans, help us out a little bit. And help us shave a little bit off of our phone bill so that we don't always teeter on the razor's edge of disaster. Okay? Do you mind? Is this offensive to you? I hope not. Because I try to be candid with you. Just the phone bill for the Head On Radio Network. And I know, this probably isn't much if you're, you know, Westwood One or God knows what or the Clear Channel or something, but to us who are doing everything in our power to build liberal conversation, to build liberal talk, to build a progressive dialogue in this country, 1,000 is as big as 1,000,000 to us. And right now, the phone bills for the Horn are that, a little bit more than $1,000 a month. And so I'm asking for your help. Now, if you don't have a long-distance calling plan, if you can't afford to, the toll-free number is still there for you. This is about you, not me. This is about a discussion with liberal, progressive America. Okay? So that's, you know, just sort of how it works. If you're calling the studio during non-broadcast operations, I would appreciate it if you need to ask a question or something that you use that same number, 304-658-5453. So that way we can dedicate ourselves to using our resources in the way in which we can best serve you. Okay? Okay. I hope that works for you. So There's plenty to talk. I want to get small time tonight. We talk about great big honking national issues because they engage us, because they do demand our attention. But every now and then I run across a story or two that are small and unlikely to be seen and deserve all the attention that we would ordinarily devote to something that is sweeping the nation. I got a couple of those this evening that I hope we can get to. And after all, you know, it is Wednesday. And you know what that means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
That's right, it's communion time in the Cathedral of Common Sense, and I, Brother Bob Kincaid, am prepared to lead the liturgy. So let's take a break, We'll come back to your phone calls, 877-443-2366, or if you can do it on your nickel, 304-658-5453. Fair enough? You're listening to America's liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'm a soul drifter, and I'm out of this town. Ain't no use hanging around, you see. My heart was broken, my part was spoken. Now the ground has opened.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
The following is a Head On Radio Network special announcement. I'm back. That's right. The rampaging, ranting, tree-hugging, planet-saving, head-banging hippie is back at a brand new time. Foxed Up returns weekdays 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, and late night 1 a.m. in Sydney. So set your streamer to a new Foxed Up time here on The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit HelpMakeADifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Welcome to Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting with your host, Brother Bob Kincaid. Put your hands together, raise your eyes to the light, and welcome him. The truth will set you free. And now, here is Brother Bob Kincaid.
Oh, Put your hands into the television. Put your hands into your computer and feel the healing power. Yeah, I'm kidding. Let's go straight to the phones. Kevin calling from D.C. Hey, Kevin, thanks for calling. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Washington, as you well know. This is probably the only time you're ever going to get a call on me about religion.
Okay.
Being that it's Wednesday night prayer meeting and all, in the spirit of all that.
Okay.
I truly believe religion, like your sex life and your finances, should be very private. Very, very private. Okay?
Yes.
And if more people follow that routine, we would all get along a lot better.
I agree, Kevin. And what happens, or what has happened, is most civilized countries have figured that out for themselves, because they have gone through periods of profound repression for believing this or not believing that, or they believe the wrong way, or you don't eat the right cracker, or you don't know, you know, you believe the wrong thing about what happens to the cracker when you eat it, that kind of thing. And and as a consequence of living through that torment, they have realized that government and religion have no business whatsoever being intermingled. On the other hand, this country was founded, I was about to fall into one of the right-wing talking points. But in the Constitution, we embody the First Amendment to the Constitution that says people are free to believe as they wish. And as a consequence of that, we have never confronted the real danger of a religionization of our government. So consequently, the Puritans, the hardcores, the religion industry, the real freaks of this country, are hell-bent, literally, on trying to make our government an arm of their church.
Oh yeah. Because one thing, and it was last week, I think he had a falling out with the caller.
Well, not really a falling out. You know, when somebody calls up and says, "Yeah, you're going to be a demon," yeah, that's just kind of, it's kind of over at that point.
Oh no, he was a regular. He has a Southern accent.
Oh yeah. I know who you're talking about. I'm just not going to mention him by name.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he's going around to other shows, and I don't want to really dabble with it. But I felt compelled to call in and say, look, first of all, you know, basically vilifying you now, you know, first, and I had to say, look, it's wrong, basically.
Yeah.
You know, even though I may believe in God, you don't have to, you know, it's about respecting one another, not slamming someone down because they have conscience.
Well, you know, one of the more interesting things, Kevin, is that, I've never slammed anybody's belief in God or a supreme being, higher power, you know, whatever. But I do, you know, I take issue with people who ignore the suffering of millions while at the same time thinking that they're a saint.
Oh, yeah, and I agree with you 100%. Like me, personally, you know, I believe in the teachings of Christ. I do believe in God. I just don't like a lot of Christians or people who claim they are.
Right.
I really don't. I only have one or two people that I can truly say I like who claim to be Christian. That's them, as far as I'm concerned. I don't need them in my life.
most of them bring so much negative energy, they will bring any goodness that you have going for you down.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And most of them, I just say, well, a lot of people who, you know, go along the mid-American or Southern American line of Christianity, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them, I wouldn't say all, but a lot, do have deep-seated issues. You know, and they feel this need to settle.
Well, yeah, especially, I mean, look at the demographic information, Kevin. People, 60, 70, 80% of Americans think that the earth was created in 7 days and that man was created out of a ball of clay?
Well, you know,
they literally buy into the Genesis creation myth?
Well, I you know, I believe there are, it's a literal translation, because being that it was written a couple of thousand years ago and people weren't that educated,
mm-hmm.
they took it as a form of literal license, like 7 days could have been 7 billion years, because it also says in the Bible that a day can be, there is no concept of time.
Right.
There is no measurement of time. So I take that in them taking a literal license.
And, of course, there are entire schools of thought in the philosophical and even in the science realm as to whether or not time is a construct, as to whether time exists outside the ken of human beings. You know, it's the whole thing about if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there, does it make a noise?
Yeah, and like the whole concept of people being made out of a bowl of clay, I just take that as, well, just like in Genesis, they say, from the dirt you come, from the dirt you'll go, meaning, I guess the elements on the periodic table, the basic building block,
yeah,
makes all life, you know.
Right.
Everything in the Bible that they come out literally, poetic sense,
mm-hmm,
it could be translated into a very scientific definition, and there would be a harmony.
Well, you know, there are texts out there that have tried to point some of this out. One of them that comes immediately to mind is the Tao of Physics, in which the author takes a look at Eastern mysticism, Eastern philosophy, Eastern religion, and finds some validity for modern physics. And it's a fascinating read.
Oh, yes. And, you know, that's really how I kind of look at it, in my sense, you know, like, you know, not to press my personal, you know, the church I grew up in. I grew up Episcopalian, but that's more of a, like, how the Jews have a self of, you know, identification and tradition.
Right.
Because there are atheists that are practicing Jesus.
Sure.
Which, for years, was a which was something I couldn't understand. You know, you're Jewish. How come you don't believe in God?
I guess you'd call that some level of existentialism inside a given faith.
But it's more of a nationalistic. You know, I am from an Eastern European heritage, and there were Jews in my family. This is what I raised, and I want to continue that you know tradition.
Uh huh.
Which, as I've gotten older and wiser, I began to understand, and it's the same thing, you know, me, my parents, you know, from the West Indies, grew up under the British Empire, and all that other stuff, and that's what they were raised, and that's what I identify, that's where I feel comfortable when I want to, you know, I guess exercise my spirituality.
Right.
And, you know, and...
Well, it's the hatred that seems to come from the extremists of it, Kevin, that drive me crazy. You know, can you imagine death threats against a guy because he sculpted a chocolate Jesus?
Oh, yeah, that was just sick. Well, even years back when good old Giuliani was our mayor, when they had the Madonna, and part of it was made out of cow manure.
Oh, yeah.
He went ballistic, you know, and I'm like...
Yeah, going to shut down the museum. They had threats to burn it down.
Yeah, you know, come on.
And those things were going on long before the Muslims ever got upset about a cartoon.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, well, again, going back to, well, you came from the dirt, you're going back to dirt. If you're a religious person, says it, you know,
right.
You know, it's like, but who, you know, who's one to question irrationality? I know I'm not, you know, Giuliani. He has his own issues, you know, the whole cross-dressing thing, and, you know.
I think he enjoys...
I don't want
to
even...
You know, far be it from me to... I don't care how somebody lives their lives, but, you know, I really do. I think Rudy enjoyed his little foray into the world of Marilyn Monroe.
Well, Dager Hoover had the same problem, too. So,
this is true.
You know, so I think there's something with the fascists and the cross-dressing thing. So there's a lot of top-notch.
Well, there's something, Kevin, with the fascists and sexually repressive conduct.
Oh, yeah.
They can't have a normal sex life. They can't be comfortable in their own skin and in their own sexuality because if they were to do that, then they wouldn't be able to castigate the rest of the world for not being, literally as holy as them.
Oh, yeah. And if you ever, like, look at the History Channel and read the psychological profiles for all the Nazis, they had extreme sexual issues. Extreme.
Oh, yeah, they were living in the world of the weird and hanging from the chandeliers, no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, so, you know, who knows what this American Reich can...
Well, there are open questions, let's see, Himmler, Himmler couldn't. Himmler never did maintain a decent, meaningful relationship with his wife. You know, Hitler only married at the last minute
when he was about to die.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. What does that, tell you about his worldview and marriage? No thanks.
Oh yeah, you know, coming through family values.
Exactly.
But he got into everyone else's bedroom, so you know.
Yeah. Also that he could, you know, I don't know. You see movies of him with the German Shepherd as often as you do him with Eva Braun. But I'm not going to go there. Kevin, awfully good to talk to you, man.
Oh yeah, and by the way, you can count on me to call that alternate number.
Okay, well, thank you very kindly. I don't mean to be cheap or anything.
No, hey, I perfectly understand, and I support you guys in any way I can.
Well, thank you very kindly, Kevin.
Okay, have a good one.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.
And we'll go to a break. We'll come back afterwards, and more of your phone calls. We're lit up already. I think we got two lines open. If you want to make use of them, you're welcome to. We'll chat all the way to the top of the hour. This is the Head On Radio Network.
God!
I'm Bob Kincaid.
En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. À l'époque où Jean sans terre d'Angleterre était le roi, Dominique, notre père, combattit les albigeois. Dominique, nique, nique, s'en allait tout simplement, routier, pauvre et chantant. En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu. Certains jours, un hérétique par des ronces le conduit, mais notre père de mine.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. If we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to irs.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
this song way, way, way too much. But, you know, there's a, you know, get off the cross because I need the wood. Yeah, we got stuff we need to build. You know, okay, well, yeah, while you're up on the cross, I'll be on the veranda having a cigar. Okay, it's about 24 minutes before the hour, and we go straight to the phones. King David McKenzie calling from Wisconsin. Hey, King David, how are you?
Okay, just to let you know, in the last few minutes, NBC, MSNBC has had a bulletin. They are canceling the Don Imus simulcast.
Ah, hot diggity, good.
And so...
You know, I guess that's politically incorrect. No, screw political correctness, King David. You know, there's no place for that old freak in the 21st century. I'm sorry, I just feel that way.
At one time, he was good.
At one time, he was edgy. At one time, he was... At one point, it could be fairly said that he had invented a genre.
And the content that he invented it with, was substantive. It was solid. You know, the idea of, you know, there was one of his bits when he did that, when he was still in Sacramento. It's not the one that got him fired, but the it's from the Sacramento station, I should think.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a rather famous bit that he did just after the Jackson State and Kent State deals. He called a McDonald's in Sacramento and said that he was this person in the brass of the Air National Guard, having a troop movement going to one of the local colleges, and wanted to put in an order for 1,200 hamburgers to be picked up at about 10:30 that morning so that his guys could eat.
Along the way, Dave, there are lines, and people who dance on the razor's edge will find it, go over it, and pay consequences for it. I remember maybe 1994. Do you remember the radio host by the name of the Grease Man?
Oh yeah, 97. The first time there were two incidents. One in the late 80s, one in I think more like 97, 98.
Okay. Yeah. The one in particular that I'm thinking about is not the Air Florida remark, but rather it was after the Grammys, and I think Macy Gray had won something.
Lauryn Hill.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It was Lauryn Hill. He plays a little bit of a song by Lauryn Hill, and then opens the microphone and says, "Jesus, no wonder they drag him behind trucks."
And that's a verbatim quote, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was gone. And rightfully so.
And I was going to. I had been asked by Billy Shears to try to do a piece for his.
His music and politics blog.
Yeah, and if I can just conjure up enough courage to hang on and actually go ahead and do it, I might still do it. But I've tried in the last 4 days to do something, not in the last 4 days, but four times in the last 2 days,
mm-hmm.
sit down and do something about this whole situation with the Imus deal and what I really believe is at the root of it. And it goes further than simply some guy in New York uttering a comment like this into a microphone. It goes down to the idea that we as American radio listeners have accepted that our local radio station has every right to deny somebody from their own community the opportunity to broadcast in order to give a time slot to somebody in New York or in Seattle or in Dallas who already has a platform.
Truth in that, very much, yes.
And that is what got me upset. So upset that I, you know, because I have had to put up with that for, you know, over the last 15 years, and it's gotten to the point where even with the allegedly liberal organizations locally here in La Crosse, I went to them and I said, I want to try to do a program on our local talk radio station. There are only two ownership radio ownership companies in La Crosse. Only one has a talk radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they have two talk radio stations, but the other one is sports. And, of course, we know how lively that is.
Sure.
And I went to them, and I said, all right, here are my credentials for being able to do it. Here is what I have been able to achieve in other communities where I have been. I want to try to do this. The response I got was, what do we need you for when we can go on the Internet and get Amy Goodman?
Well, that's
quite literally, that is what I got. And I'm trying to figure out what these people are talking about.
Well, if they're one of the things that presents out of what you just described, Dave, is the need to continue, and it's part and parcel of what we're doing here at the Horn. The need to develop talent, whether it's local, international, global, national, statewide, whatever. The reason there aren't many liberal talkers is because there's nobody out there creating the ground in which they can develop.
And very few people have been willing to call what that situation is what it is. It's a blacklisting.
In a way, and in some ways, it's also fiscal laziness. If with the way automation's set up now, it's easier to have a jukebox. You know, there are talk stations all over the country where once you've programmed the automation, once in a while you run an automated cart of the weather, local weather being read, and an automated cart of the local news at the at the bottoms or whatever, and everything else is coming off the bird out of the sky. Nothing local about it.
And it's not just the talk stations doing that. If you have an oldies radio station
mm-hmm.
in the local market, the chances are good that material is actually, most of it, if not all of it, is coming in from a satellite from Dallas or from Ventura County, California.
You know what, Dave? I am so old. Not that old. But I am so old that I remember back as a young man working summers at the radio station in between college semesters. I remember loading those great big 15-inch reel-to-reel reels with that logo on the front of the white cardboard box that said Drake Chenault.
Yep.
Remember him?
Very, very much so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we had him programming an adult contemporary AM and a country FM, and just on every 2 hours you went in and you changed the tapes, and that's all there was to it.
Yeah.
But lucky for me, on the AM, I got to jock between songs. Granted, I wasn't queuing up vinyl, but I was at least jocking and learning to do the gig.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist anymore. Live real time talk doesn't exist anymore in terms of music radio, and we it was great to have that job created for a kid who was trying to save money up for the next year of school. It was great to be developing talent. I think that's just so important. But now you might hire one kid for six stations who works overnight, and he goes and he voice tracks on an automation program and never understands what it is to be in the moment with the music.
Actually, you just dated yourself there, because very few places even have anybody on site overnight anymore.
Well, that's true, too. He probably goes home about 10 at worst.
Try probably 7 or 8 at latest.
Yeah, and then you turn on whatever's coming down off the satellite. Very true, very true.
And meanwhile, there could be a tornado warning declared, and nothing is on the radio station because the
radio station
is not programmed.
Yeah, there was a toxic tanker somewhere in the upper Midwest that got loose, and the local emergency management people were trying to get hold of the radio station to tell people to shelter in place, blah, 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 blah. Well, it was a clear channel station, and, you know...
Wasn't that the cluster up by Fargo, Grand Forks?
Bingo.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Exactly. Hey, I've got a couple of people stacked up in front of the interview here. Let me run along, David. It's always good to talk to you, and I hope you can do that thing for Billy Shears, because I think you'll bring some really interesting perspective to it.
All right, very quickly, for one night only on unreportednews.net, I have that Henry Morgan program up that I talked to you a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's up for tonight, and then tomorrow is going to be a program on how radio covered the death of President Roosevelt, the anniversary of which will be tomorrow.
It is indeed. You're very timely. You know that, Dave?
I do what I can.
Thanks so much. Have a great evening.
You too. Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.
And on to Peter. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Hey. You know, Agnes played the Dominica song. I'll tell you how to get through that without suffering. You just change the lyrics to Dominatrix, Matrix.
Oh, no, because then I get this metal picture of pervert nuns.
Oh, it helps. Oh, so I called AT&T. I have a phone card in my wallet left over from the year that I was held hostage by the Pentecostal Holiness Drug Recovery Center.
Yes,
I do. And we could make a 10-minute call home every week, but you had to use a calling card. So I pulled out and checked them. I had 10 minutes left, so I recharged it. And so I am calling on a non-toll line, and I just think that's wonderful. I'm glad to do that, you know.
Well, I fear I sound cheap in mentioning
it. Not
at
all cheap. You know, the other networks have a lot going for them, fancy producing and lots of slick promos.
Hey, Agnes is fancy, and she produces.
Well, she's dressed right, yes.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, what we have is time. We have conversations with people, and we don't cut people off with commercials and all that kind of stuff. We have what really counts, I think, with this network. But getting back to what I know you have people stacked up, I just wanted to, there's something that's really annoying me about this whole IMA situation, and it's got to do with the term politically correct. You know, people are beating him up because it's, you know.
I despise that term.
Oh, I despise it because it's a complete freaking lie. What the word politically correct is actually trying to get at is what they're saying is maybe spiritually correct or sensitive to other people. Are not you know, peeing on the ancestors of those who've been persecuted in this society. You know, there's nothing political about it. You know, when we say things that are supportive of people, you know, we're called bleeding heart liberals. And
right.
If somebody does say something supportive, and the other hand side of that, you know, you're called being politically correct. But the real truth of the situation is they're just a bunch of evil bastards. What it comes down to is just being, you know, open to society in a loving and kind way.
Well, and something
kind.
Yeah, and something else that that I brought up to a certain extent, and I saw Bart Kopp bring up at his page, and when you see it in print, it sort of imprints itself on you because I guess most of us are visual learners. But he said, okay, fine, you're going to get rid of IMUS, but don't forget that the right wing. that right-wing radio exists for the very purposes that Imus was fulfilling. And just because you get rid of Imus doesn't mean you've gotten rid of Rush, who has said 1,000 times more offensive things than Imus will ever say. It doesn't mean that you've gotten rid of Beck, Cindy Sheehan a tragedy whore.
Oh my God!
You haven't gotten rid of Ann Coulter, who wants to put rat poison in the dessert of a Supreme Court justice.
These are very good points, Bob, and he did good by making those points. I had not heard him make those points.
And so you know, it's not like suddenly right wing radio is going to become nice. Now on the other hand, Imus has people calling his show, like Tom Oliphant, the columnist from Boston, saying, solidarity forever, brother.
Yeah.
And who was it? Maybe Howard Fineman from Newsweek saying, I man, you've just got to learn that there's some jokes you can't tell anymore.
Can't tell them anymore. There's no progress there. All he's saying is you got to suffer. You got to suffer and bite that tongue because, you know, you just can't do it anymore.
Yeah,
your rights are going away.
Yeah, your rights are, and it's the culture's fault for being so squishy that we can't tell watermelon jokes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You have to be politically correct. You have to respect people.
Well, I had an email from our good friend David in Tennessee,
yeah.
And it was a brilliant moment. I wish I could develop the thing into a bit, but he said he realized that Imus was just sort of replowing old ground, and next up would be the Imus and Andy show.
Huh. How funny is that? Well, of course, I'm really just tired of hearing about Imus, but of course, you know, until I get my 2 cents in, the subject's just not closed.
Darn right.
I know
there are a lot of people sick of it, and I know that there are so-called hard news stories out there. But you know what? If we can get rid of one hateful old racist bastard like Imus, then you know we can start on the next hateful racist bastard. Maybe Rush, or maybe my God,
yeah.
the Michael the Savage Wiener.
Yeah, we had a caller, by the way, on one of the earlier programs. His name I shall not mention. Who went on to going on about how we ought to practice our Christian, forgive and forget. Well, hell, I forgive him, but I sure as hell don't want him employed. Not in that position, anyway. I don't want to hear it.
Well, you know, Al Sharpton was on the Today Show yesterday, and we were talking about it when the streaming computer so rudely cut me off.
Oh, yeah. By the way, we decided that wasn't a cable problem, that Agnes gnawed through a cable.
Oh, okay. All right.
It was just a virtual slider decided to reset itself.
I've already had an email from someone suggesting that someone's gotten my virtual desktop and is playing with the machine.
I kind of doubt that, but go ahead.
It's
a possibility. I'm not discounting the email for whoever that person is.
Yeah.
Yes, that can happen, but in this particular situation, I don't think that happens.
Al Sharpton pointed out, he said, I got stabbed once, and I went to visit the man in jail, and I told him that I forgave him for stabbing me. I didn't then turn around to the guard and say, now let him out.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, there's a big difference between forgiveness and redemption and exoneration.
Right, and how are we supposed to go all Christian, forgive and forget with these freaking Republican hacks all of a sudden after listening to 20 years of rule of law? Rule of law, rule of law.
Right, and you know, while we're at it, can we bring the last elected president along, Bill Clinton, and see if they're how they're feeling about forgive and forget with him?
Yeah. Let's bring that up.
Especially in light of the fact that they didn't even have any business in his sex life, and there was nothing for them to forgive.
Exactly. Yeah.
But instead, we had to listen to old serial adulterers like Henry Hyde and Bob Barr, who fathered an illegitimate child or maybe even paid for an abortion, and Newt Gingrich, who was banging his own intern like a cheap Chinese gong the whole time the impeachment proceedings were going on. They were hollering, the flag is falling, this is a matter of constitution, this is a constitutional crisis.
Not to mention the overnight Jeff Gannon visits, and you know that wasn't free, nor was it benign.
No, and you know the major Rod Majors or Dirty Sanchez or whatever his name was, that you know the male prostitute who turned out to be the darling of the right wing that got busted a couple of weeks ago, that just kind of dwindled away, even though he was investigated by the Marine Corps for active fraud, for conning people out of money for a tour to Iraq that he never took.
Really?
Really?
Oh, I must have been busy that day. I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah, the guys out there claim, I'm being persecuted. They done spit on me just like they did the Vietnam vets. They spit on me, Corporal Sanchez. They spit on me, and they said that I was a baby killer. And it turns out it's all a lie.
Jeez. Miss a day, miss a scandal.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, I mean, that's how it is with the Republicans and the right-wingers and the so-called conservatives.
Yep, ain't that the truth. Well... I love you, buddy.
Love you, too.
I love Agnes.
I love you.
I love your children and all of your dogs. I'm going to move in, and you can take care of me when I'm old.
We'll do it.
We will.
I'm a nurse. I will take care of you, your Uncle Peter, to our family.
Oh, I could just say, let's do scenes out of, what was that, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Let's do the tea tray and the bird. Hours of fun.
See, I know her. I'm married to her. I went straight to Stephen King. I love you.
Oh, Jesus. Not
you
mercy.
Can't leave.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Lord, hobbled. Oh, this is just classic. This is worthy of webcam. Oh, and guys, just quickly, this webcam thing that John is doing vodcasts now, and you know, maybe all the hosts will do that, but it was just freaking wonderful.
I know. It sort of grabs you and takes hold of you and doesn't let go, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's like you're... And then he gets
You
so
were
happy.
So skeptical when I told you about it.
Yeah. I was like, oh, God, this is more than I needed to hear right now. It's 11 o'clock at night. Don't call me anymore. I hate you. And so then I went and I watched it. And I'm like, I actually called you back going, this is wonderful. Yeah, it really is.
The bug has bitten. Oh, yeah. I'm setting up the tripod. We're going to start vodcasting this show as soon as we do a little studio rearranging and things. Agnes has made me promise only to shoot the back of her head.
Oh, that'll laugh.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she'll be leaning back like blowing kisses to the camera.
You know all the kids are going to come in for cameos.
Oh, yeah.
And all the kiddies.
If they've just got clothes on, I'm happy.
Well, it's the mountains, buddy.
Yeah, got my bath, Daddy. Yeah.
Exactly. It's just like the South. I know what it's like. We're all half naked. It's either hot or nobody's here. Hell, I'm half naked now. It's like,
what do? Well, you know, and you know, the possibilities are endless. You know, naked from the waist up radio.
Yeah, really. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Terrifying, isn't it?
It's a horrifying thought, and that does describe the situation. Okay, I'll let you go. Bye.
Okay, Peter, take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye now.
Bye.
And on to our good buddy Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, well, you know, let's get into news. We'll do this quickly.
Take a breath. You don't have to do this like an auctioneer. It's okay.
Okay. Well, the thing about Fred Thompson, we feel very sorry for Fred Thompson. Hope he feels good. You know what I mean? You know, on his thing about his cancer.
Yeah.
But now I'm just curious. Tomorrow, will we hear Rush and will we hear Bort all of demanding he get out of the race like they did Edwards?
You know, they did sort of do that, didn't they?
You know, it's like I say.
Well, he can't get out of the race because he's not in it yet.
Well, I know, but you know, I mean, it's just going to be interesting to watch. And like I say, I hope nobody on the left says anything in that respect. But I just want to wait just a day or two, just see if the right wingers say word one. You know, it's like you all were so insistent that John Edwards could not be in the race because of his wife's cancer. Well, fine. Where are you? You know, I want to hear y'all stand up, and scream real loud, please.
And you know what you'll get?
Oh yeah,
crickets.
Well. I got to get our local right winger. I got to blast him this morning.
Did you get a piece of him?
Oh, he was on it this morning. I called in. I said, people in glass houses really should throw stones. I said, you know, it's real nice if you really want to criticize Imus, that's fine. You're within your right. But I said, let's look at your lineup. Let's see. We got Bortz. We got Limbaugh. I'm leaving out the local. We got the Savage Wiener. We got O'Reilly. I said, and I went down the list, and I started to go down the list. I said, wait a minute, I'll put it in one simple three-word question. If you can answer this question for me and explain to me how it's not symptomatic of your station, then I'll never call back again. What's a feminazi?
Bingo.
And I said, because if you want to get it on IMUS, let's talk about Rush, who's been doing this for 15 years. You know, who's been riding that thing ever. I mean, ever since the Clintons first started getting into it. I mean, you know, he was on Hillary in 91 and 92.
Call me back when the bone's out of your nose.
Oh, well, the one that I had not heard, I'll be honest, till all this started off with IMUS, was I had not heard the one he did on Hillary. The one about the gold teeth and the cornrows.
Oh, you see, I did that Friday and I did that again last night.
And I had not heard that originally.
See, so much of this was by the boards and not discussed. And as usual, the mainstream or professional media that has the attention span of chalk didn't get to, you know, one of his sidekicks. But one of them, during the exchange where he used the nappy-headed hose comment, one of his sidekicks calls the Rutgers women's basketball team jickaboos.
Well, you got to understand.
Holy cats!
You got to understand, I'm McGurk, the one who really egged this one on,
mm-hmm.
his producer. This is the guy that always does the Ray Nagin impression.
Yeah. And well, if Kara, and see in the cornrows, what was it, March 7th program, where the cornrows comment came from, he did it. McGurk did an impression of the Maya Angelou,
uh-huh.
where he said they took away our dignity and our hope and our spears.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like, say, the best thing to do, if anybody has any doubt, like, say, go either to Media Matters or go to Crooks and Liars and just put in any name. You know, the right wingers, and just look at the list that comes up. Because you can go to Media Matters and go down to their personalities list, and I mean, you know, it's just page after page.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, that's what made what Bart Kopp said so trenchant. It's not like this didn't happen in a vacuum. This isn't an isolated incident. This isn't a one-off and gone. It's not just IMUS. It is an entire machine built patiently by the right wing since 1964 to do nothing but degrade, demean, demonize, and vilify the other side.
But have you noticed one thing? It's kind of caught my eyes watching this the last couple of days. Have you seen anybody from Media Matters, or even anybody from Media Research, or from, what is the one, Reeves thing, AIM, you know, Accuracy of Media? I mean, I have not seen anybody from any watchdog group. They've had plenty of people on the radio on, you know, people who are hosts of their own radio shows, but I have not seen virtually, other than Kurt, who, if you want to call him a media critic.
Please.
I know. Yes, this is Howard Kurtz, and we hate them. We will report things on the media, except for some fellow named Beck.
Yeah.
Amazing enough, our computer can't write that name. But, you know, it's amazing to me. Like I say, I've been watching and listening to this thing on different shows and stuff, and it's like, say, because the one thing I think they're scared of is somebody from, like, media, from say, Media Matters coming on and going, IMUS ain't the worst. He's probably benign compared to, here, let me lay you out five other people. You know, let me tell you about this.
Well, and see, that's why I said last night, Luke, that this battle, I'm afraid that we on our side are going to think this is some kind of a victory. It's not. We lost it when the thing got framed as being an IMUS problem and not a right-wing babblehead problem.
Well, one thing they've tried doing on one or two shows I've heard is they're trying to say that, well, IMUS is a liberal. You know, some of the right-wingers are trying to claim,
Love of God.
And I'm sitting there going, let's see now. You have John McCain on virtually every week on his show. You have Joe Lieberman every chance he can be on.
Yeah, and that's like pornography when Lieberman's on.
You know what I mean? But, I mean, if you sit there and just look at the list of the non-NBC people that they have on, you know what I mean? If you look at just the list of the people they have on, you know, from politics, it's like, I'm sorry. I mean, this is mostly right-wingers. You have Lou Dobbs on there half the time. You have Trump. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the liberals. It just constantly brings me back, Luke, to the question of why is it our only the great hope of liberalism is a pretty much straight up news anchor in the form of Keith Olbermann. What would happen if you took a Mike Malloy or a Sam Cedar or Stephanie Miller? My God, put that woman on television.
That's what I'm wondering about is who, you know, I've got the sound down, and I've got MSNBC on. You know what I mean? They're talking to different people right now. They're talking to Ms. Stringer, the Rutgers, the basketball coach.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I mean? I'm just wondering. I tried to listen to it while they were doing the statement, and they mentioned nothing about what they're going to replace it with.
And see, the advertisers bailed out too, Luke.
Well, see, that's where it came down.
Well, sure it did, but did you notice the statements that were made?
Well, what was the one that got me was one of the Staples, you know, they said we're out. But did you see the one from Bigelow Tea? We're reassessing. You know, we're thinking about it.
The one that got me was American Express, where they said, we don't advertise on controversial programs. This is not a controversial program. Imus is a pig.
Imus is a burnout. That's what Imus is.
Well, there's that, too.
You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know, you got to wonder if he keeps that hat on, like I say, just to keep those two or three live brain cells still from escaping.
Exactly. Luke, I got to roll on. We blew through the news. How about that? You topped
it. I did
it
this time. I'm
no,
sorry.
You to, no, don't apologize. You topped the news. This was more interesting than the news, trust
thing,
me.
One thing real quick.
Okay.
The RNC computer thing. Now we find out that Mr. Abramoff was sending emails to and from Karl Rove, and he sent one accidentally to the White House, and they told him to run this through the RNC server. You've got to wonder when that warrant showing up and tells them, we want to see that RNC server, we want our computer people to take it apart.
Well, it'll that warrant will show up when...
About an hour after they reformat it.
Yeah, well, that after they reformat it and after Alberto Gonzalez... pick some impossible thing.
I know.
Although, you know, more than half of America now loathes Alberto Gonzalez. Luke, thanks so much, brother.
Have a good evening.
You take it. Take it easy. Bye now. Oh, just for, I was going to say, you want to run the second hour intro just to break things up? Nah, let's keep it rolling. As promised, we're joined on the phone right now by Portland's own John Kuntz, musician, author, songwriter, and recent father of It Can Never Happen Here, a new disc on Moon Records. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I am so glad to finally get a chance to talk to you.
The pleasure's mine, Bob.
I've had the album on the player for about a week now, and I got to tell you, I'm just thrilled to pieces.
Well, so am I. I'm glad to be on air with you. You know, because when you're I'm fairly obscure. I get a little bit of radio play here and there, but it's always really a treat to get some recognition on air, especially live. I love it.
Well, I'm the proud owner of Train Fare Home.
Oh.
Of course, this album as well as Accessory to the Crime. I've got those three courtesy of our good friend David.
Oh, great. Great.
And I was so glad when I got introduced to your music, because it's in a world of music that is frequently seems to consist of the musical version of Peeps Candy. This thing's got some meat and potatoes behind it.
Well, I'm usually carving with a pretty sharp knife when I'm writing. Yeah.
But in all of those discs, you haven't shied away from. From sensitive topics or from topics that could be deemed, I hate that word, controversial.
Right.
Is that something that's just been your mark through your career?
Well, yeah, I've often, you know, tried to write topical songs. I've got a little better at it recently in the last few years. I used to not quite tackle the subject matters as, you know, front on as I do these days. I find that there's a lot of material to work with out there, for one thing, and with everything that's going on in our political sort of downfall and chaos right now in America, I really feel that things in my lifetime, since I've been paying attention to politics and to government, and I guess the first election I voted in was when Mr. McGovern lost. And I'm just saying that with the dismantling of rights, constitutional rights, and all of these things that have been going on, there's really a lot of material. material for a guy to work with, if you know what I mean.
And you're are you playing this material live in clubs yet or anything?
Oh yeah, I've been playing it. Train Fare Home came out in the year 2000, and Accessory to the Crime came out in December of 2003. Is when it officially came out. It didn't really get out into the stores until January of 2004. I've been playing this stuff all along. I have to say that some of the more anti-war material, like on Accessory to the Crime, there's a song called Rich Man's War.
It's been played on this program.
Oh, thank you. And at first, when I would be playing that song, from time to time, I would have people of the right-wing political persuasion in my face, you know, occasionally. Sometimes they'd be polite enough to wait until I took a break. Sometimes they'd just start heckling you straight out, telling you to move to China and all kinds of stuff like that. So I said, well, okay, this is a successful piece of music. I made that guy mad.
Yeah, and they're so original. Why don't you leave America?
Yeah, it was really odd. The guy that was yelling at me one night to move to China, I didn't understand that at all. I don't know where he put that together.
Yeah, because you'd be better able to say this in China. And you know, China attacked Iraq.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know. They're an odd bunch, John. But this particular album, the title cut, It Can Never Happen Here,
yes,
seems to address itself to some of the things we've seen go down. I mean, flavors of habeas corpus, the Abu Ghraib abuses come to mind.
Yes.
Do you just sit down and say, well, I'm going to write about this? Or is the process more obtuse or more obscure or more lightning bolt out of the blue?
It happens both ways. Sometimes it's a lightning bolt, and that's always great because, then within a few minutes, the body work is, for the most part, complete. But that particular song, I knew what I wanted to say, but I struggled with it for a long time because, if you're going to actually use phrases in lyrics like posse comitatus.
Yeah, what rhymes with orange?
Right. And you have to it's a bit of a chore to figure out exactly how you're going to work those things in there. But with that song, I was really fairly outraged at the way that the Senate had just kind of laid down and let this happen. And I was just really infuriated by what was going on. And so it was fairly easy to put that song together once the events got going. Other songs are harder to address because there's a song on Accessory called The Jim Crow Ball,
mm-hmm,
which is about the story of Luke Easter, who was like the second or third guy brought up, to break the color barrier in baseball right after Jackie Robinson, right in the same year. And, he'd been playing in what is always referred to in documentaries as the old Negro Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did not want to use that phrase in the song. And so, you have to work around certain phrases that you don't want to use as well when you're trying to tell a topical story. And so that's kind of the real work of it, is the telling the story and saying what you want to say and using the right verbiage and phrases.
Well, John, if you don't mind, I'd like for us to take a moment here and let folks hear a track. Would that be okay?
I'm all for it.
Okay, well, let's do a little setup, if you don't mind. I've already mentioned the title cut. That's not where I want to go right now. I spend a lot of time on this program railing against the war in Iraq.
Yes.
And you've got a cut on this disc simply titled Iraq. And I've got to say that the first time I heard it, I got little chills on up and down the back of my neck, and the little hairs stood up back there, because it's a personal visualization of the individual impact of this war that seems that we have been so separated from.
Yes.
How did it happen?
The song. I was really tired, as you probably are, of the lack of mainstream media attention to the real cost of the war. And so much time is spent talking about the casualties in a very dismissive sort of way. And these sort of, to an individual that loses someone in this conflict, this is really big. It's really large. I thought of Cindy Sheehan, of course, but I also thought of just some of the people in my neighborhood that have people over there. And then I'm a father as well. I really put myself in the place of the parent of the victim as to how I would feel, and tried to address it as a and there's no way, since I do not have that personal grief, there's no way for me to actually really experience it. I don't think you can even dream to experience it without suffering it. But I just wanted to try and put it in words, something for the people that have lost these, you know, really brave, wonderful kids that have gone over there. Well, people of all ages, but a lot of young people that have gone over there and paid the ultimate price.
Well, let's go to that track now. John Kuntz, Iraq, from It Can Never Happen Here.
I remember your State of the Union address. Your call to duty, you called on
that's amazing. There are layers in that song. The musicianship, first of all, is you hung up on John. Agnes, you hung up on John. You hung up on John, Agnes. Yes, you did. Okay, I'm hoping John will call back in a moment. Okay, John's back. Oh my God, that's a little bit. Let me get him back here for a second. John, there are way too many buttons in this room.
Okay, I'm sorry. I called you right back.
Bless your heart.
The song was over. I lost you.
Yeah, that was on our end.
Okay, no problem. I'm back.
Thank you so much for calling back.
Hey, of
no,
course.
I was just saying that that song moves me on so very many different levels. Tremendous musicianship. The lyric, I can see a father walking sort of blindly, numbly, dazedly around a house, because we define ourselves by our children.
Yes.
And then for reasons that are utterly fraudulent, utterly fake, dummied up, ginned up, faked up, no good reason whatsoever to have that child taken on more than 3,000 individual occasions. Yeah, no one beyond this song, I haven't heard it put in better terms or anyone try to address the real psychic or emotional needs of or expressions of somebody who's going through that, because this is a war we don't pay, you know, a lot of us aren't paying attention to it.
Well, you know, it's a tough one to play. I get usually a pretty I don't get a varied response on this one. People are usually pretty sympathetic to it. They usually listen up, and I have to say that when you're addressing a subject like this, I wasn't really sure after I wrote it. It was one of those ones where you listen back to the demo and you're a little bit afraid of it. And I decided, played it for my wife and who's my most brutal critic. And she said, go with it.
I know little bit about the brutal critic part.
You know, she'll come right out and tell me, that bores me to tears if I write something that's not worthy. But, she felt that it moved her as a parent. And that was all that I wanted to achieve, really, was to try.
And yet, in the lyric,
in that sense of loss, it's one thing to bury your parents or your grandparents. It's another thing to have to bury your children. And those are, I think that those are two completely different levels of grief.
And one being natural and one being so wholly unnatural.
Exactly.
But you also deal with issues on a macro and a micro level. This I believe, is the first song I've ever heard that mentions the Downing Street Minutes.
Yeah. Well, I felt that the Downing Street memo really didn't get enough face time myself in the mainstream media, as well as a lot of other things that I thought were very crucial. As far as what the hard facts are, and there are certain areas of the I don't really watch much in the way of television news. I don't watch much in the way of television, I have to be honest.
Same here.
I'm just not I can't really seem to watch it. I'm kind of bored by it. I listen to the radio a lot, shows like yours and the BBC late at night, things like that, the print media, but I felt that definitely the print media and some of the other areas of media that I have listened to did not spend much time on that subject. I mean, if you can take something like whoever this, what was this woman, this model here lately? What was her name? That
Anna Nicole Smith.
Oh yeah, thank you.
Yeah, sorry, I'm ashamed I even know.
I couldn't remember. I apologize. I should have known it, but yeah.
No, I'm glad you don't.
Well, I'm just saying I don't watch much television, but you know the thing is all the time that was spent on that, and it is an unfortunate event. But there's space time that needs to be spent on the really important things. And that particular, the Downing Street memo, I think is very crucial to what's going on here. And one of the problems has just been the mainstream media, what is it, you guys don't want to face this? You don't want to face the truth, or what? What's the problem?
Let's talk a minute. You know, you address in the song, you address yourself via the character, the father in the song. You address yourself directly to George Bush.
Yes, I do.
Do you think? Because you know we've had reportage, John, of incidents where parents have looked him in the eye and asked questions just like the daddy in your song asks, and of course he's got this pat answer about, well, it's just for freedom, and it's for democracy. Do you think he really believes that, John? Or, at the end of the day, does he know that he's run a hoodoo job on an entire nation?
That's a tough question. For me to know what's in that man's mind.
Well, first assume a mind, but...
For one thing, I think that for the father to ask this question in the way that I address the question is, what is the real reason, sir? If you could give me the real reason, because that is the real reason that everyone wants to hear. We remember what the Downing Street memo was about, and you know there's everything from wild conspiracy theories to you name it concerning 9/11. But what is the real reason that you took my son in uniform and sent him into this conflict for which he paid with his life? Because the reason keeps changing. You know, it was one thing, and then it's
weapons of mass destruction, bringing democracy.
I keep hearing different reasons, as you have, but I would like to know what the real reason is. And
do you have an opinion, or do you have a suspicion about a real reason?
I have a lot of suspicions. I think that there were a lot of lies told concerning, well, it was all the evidence concerning the presentation in front of the United Nations and bogus intelligence, and then trying to dump that blame off on underlings and people of lesser rank, and on and on and on. You know, the buck has to stop at the top. I mean, it's the president's job to know what the truth is and to tell the truth to the public. I suspect that this is a business deal, as all and as many wars are, and that it is for money and for oil and it's for colonialization. And there's a lot of people that have gotten really rich, Halliburton being one. The obvious and disgusting conflict of interest between the vice president, Mr. Cheney, being still receiving the benefit of stock options, I believe.
Yes.
While he's still in office. And, this is amazing to me that all this money is being made by privatization, and then American citizens that are being paid much less money for service pay are dying. And I suspect that the reason for the war is not, well, number one, it's not to avenge 9/11, because we all know that that's not where it came from.
And yet they're still doing it. They're still trying. Dick Cheney with Limbaugh just last week tried to connect Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda or whatever that organization is. There's something that from time to time it's an ongoing debate, internal debate on this program. Do they think we're stupid or are they?
Well, like it or not, you know, the argument now is that if you pull out now, you're going to leave a breeding ground for more terrorist training. The situation is, you know, you can listen to any particular source of information, but there are multitudes of Iraqi civilians that have been killed, and not just Sunnis against Shia and killing each other. We, our bombs, our shock and awe, all of it, the initial attack and things that have gone on since our invasion in 2003, a lot of civilians have died. And so
750,000 at this point, I think.
If they don't have a breeding ground in Iraq, believe you me, that doesn't mean that the deal's off. They'll find somewhere else. But this is a death wish that's not over for a long time, because you started something here that is not going to be easy to finish. There are people that are going to hold grudges on this for a long time. And my hope in the end of all of this for America is that somewhere down the line between Democrats and Republicans, you're going to have to get back to the checks and balances. What really happened here was the idea that a party was going to run a one-party system, and that there was, you know, the Republicans were going to be the majority party forever. And I mean, you have the guys that were the orchestrators of that intent that openly admit it. And, I mean, the Hammer was just on TV here, and I heard him say it a couple of weeks ago, shamelessly. We have to get back to checks and balances. We have to get back to a system that works on compromise between left and right, and we have to govern ourselves. And somehow we have to make peace in the world, and we can't do it by invading other countries and killing civilians. That might sound simplistic, but it seems rather obvious.
Sometimes simple answers are by far the most elegant and the most likely to be correct. I think that might even be a scientific principle somewhere along the way.
Yeah,
John.
I'm just the songwriter. I'm espousing here on the radio, and I'm really
And Homer was just a poet. Okay,
right.
I believe in the past. I don't believe in something like just an artist, John. I believe art is the reflection of our character, of our soul, of our hopes, our dreams, and also a reflection of our ability to recognize our own failings. That's why it was so refreshing to me to hear some of the songs on this album, because it means when something like this enters the art stream, then there begins to be hope, and that's a lot of what I take away from what you're doing here. If it's okay, and I understand you're taking away family time this evening. A very happy birthday to your boy.
Oh, thank you.
If you've got a few more minutes, I would like to play another cut, because I'd like folks to know that, you know, this has been a very serious conversation.
Yes, sir.
But there is there's another side to this album. There's another side to what you do. And it's a side that reflects a playfulness and a recognition of the culture. And I'm talking about the song that's on the album, Trailer Love. And I'd like to play that as well, if it's okay.
Yeah, that's in the old days we used to call that the flip side.
Well, let's play that, John. And I promise we will not cut you off this time.
It's all right. If you do, I'll call you back.
Okay. All right. Again, from It Can Never Happen Here by John Koontz, one to bring a smile to you, Trailer Love. I know these people, John. All right. Hit it, Agnes.
Trailer love, drinking. She's gonna fix her hair. She's gonna wear that sweatshirt with the teddy bears. Trailer love. Oh, baby. She's my trailer love. Now walking home, we got into a fight about our microwave. Then we saw the sign that said, Jesus saves. Now we're saved. Found our way. One man and one woman in trailer love. Bush Cheney sticker in our window says fear this. Trailer love, trailer bliss.
John, that's just beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, there is a little honky-tonk a mile up the road from where I am right now. And there will be two of those sweatshirts with the teddy bears in it come Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
But it's I'm my lovely wife, my producer Agnes, is coming unglued right now. What is that just a product of being a musician, playing clubs and so forth?
Well, yeah, a large part of it is. You know, when you are a musician, you know, you see everything. I used to be a drummer for years and years, and sitting up there on the drum stool, from that vantage point, you basically were hip to everything that was going on out there. But also, and this was never meant, this song was never meant in any way to be mean-spirited towards...
I don't sense that it is.
Yeah, good. Towards anyone, I mean, saving up for a double wide myself. But, you know, mostly this was a playful way to address... folks that are just not paying attention,
sort of manipulated by the culture,
that are not, that choose not to be involved, and so they don't get to you know, they don't get to play the cards. They get, you know, they get the cards dealt to them, and so you know, I have to say that I'm a country music fan as well. And this is just a product of maybe listening to a few too many Homer and Jethro records when I was a kid. And I've always felt that, you know, country music without Homer and Jethro is, you know, has been in bad shape.
Yeah.
But that's really where a lot of sort of the lyrical playfulness comes from. Things like Homer and Jethro, or the there was an obscure writer called Tom Lehrer.
Oh yeah, sure.
Wrote some pretty funny stuff.
So let's talk a little nuts and bolts just for a minute. One, how can people get hold of the album?
Pretty easy in this modern technological world. You can get it through CD Baby. You can get it through Amazon.com. You can get it directly from me off my humble website.
Which is
just www.johnkuntz.com, and that's J-O-N, no H in John, and Kuntz is K-O-O-N-C-E, as opposed to T-Z, like the famous writer.
Right.
It's a C-E. And, you know, if you go to the website, it's kind of the old-fashioned thing. You send me a check to my P.O. box, and I'll mail you one. If you want to, you know, do it quicker, high-tech, CD Baby and Amazon.com will get you there. It's just coming out. There's a distributor called Burnside Distribution, BDC. They're handling it nationally, and stores can order it through BDC, and they'll handle anything, big stores, mom and pops, you name it. So those are the ways to get a hold of it. But it's, if you don't see it on Amazon.com when you go there, go to CD Baby. It's there.
And you know, you're up there and out there. You know, depending. You know, I'm in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, so God only knows. But you're in Portland. You're in Oregon. Are you playing live out there these days right now?
I play all the time. I'm playing tonight.
Are you really?
Yeah, I play a lot, and I do a lot of solo acoustic work, and I also have a little band that goes out, and just a little 3- and 4-piece band, depending on who I can get to show up. It's just a core group of guys when we go out and play, you know, electrified versions of all this stuff, and then I do mostly a lot of solo acoustic, one man with the acoustic guitar with a harmonica in the rack around my neck, and that's what I spend most of my time doing. And I also get out to do a little touring, low budget stuff, driving a car with a box of CDs in the trunk and a guitar and an amp, and pretty much pretty much play anywhere.
Are you gonna take this album around the country? Do you have any plans?
I'm working now on trying to get booked out on the West Coast, and our mutual friend Mr. Wiles can always line me up strings of dates through the Middle Tennessee area, and so I have a possible opportunity to hit a club in New York, and so I've really got some faraway destinations that I need to string together a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and I'm working on that.
Do you post these dates and so forth on the website?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right now I'm just working around here for the next month or so. I'm hoping this summer, the ground floor has just started to move on putting some dates together. There's a little bit of interest, like I say, in a room or two up in New York City. I'd like to string some dates along the eastern seaboard there if I could, to tie the, you know, to complete the dots between Middle Tennessee, and I can always put together Tennessee and Texas. Those are like home away from home that I've been able to go to for a long time. And I'm just trying to kind of stretch the dots out a little more, make it a little wider tour this time. But yes, I am.
Well, I would, of course, there's no way. I'd love to see you do Mountain Stage in West Virginia or something like that.
I would love to do Mountain Stage in West Virginia, or that I'd love to do that little honky tonk you were talking about with the sweatshirts down the street too.
Oh no, you wouldn't. Trust me.
Well, you know.
But I know some other little honky tonks around here that you would like.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, I'm game.
All right, hey John, thanks for spending so much time with us. Thanks for being so gracious and letting us share your music. I hope we'll hear from you again sometime. You know, it doesn't always have to be about an album. Anybody who can, you know, we call this conversation radio, and anybody who can carry on one is the kind of folks we want to talk to. And I hope this can be an ongoing friendship.
Well, I am quite flattered to be included here in your program and to be spotlighted in such a large little segment here. This is very cool. And I, any time, and like you say, whether it's talking about my work or just as a caller discussing events of the day, there's a lot going on. Love those Rutgers girls. Love how they went out. Wanted to get that in there.
Yeah.
Loved how they went out and it was their turn. I love that. You were talking about that right before I came on. And I just like to say, anytime, I'd love to call up anytime, and if I can get a date in your area, boy, I'd love to come and play and come on the show in person or whatever.
Oh, wouldn't that be a blast?
I'm game. I'm telling you, I'm game. It, you know, the tires on the car are good. It, you know, I'm ready.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at the chat room, John. We've got a chat room at headonradionetwork.com/chatroom.
Right.
And there's a bunch of people in it right now, and I'm getting a whole bunch of, we love him, we love him, tell him we love him.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
And I've got a stack of emails. You've got one of our good friends of the program is a fellow named Billy Shears. He runs a blog where he tries to combine music and politics, and you've got a standing invite. I'll email you his email address.
Please
you've got,
do.
You've got a standing invite to go over and blog at his place about a song of your choosing, one of yours, something that's moved you, something that's motivated you.
Please do.
You've really excited this little community.
Well, I'm flattered to be included in it, and I'd love to come and in person sometime.
All right. Well, thank you very much, John Kuntz. Again, the album "It Can Never Happen Here" on Moon Records, and I hope we'll hear from you again soon. And again, happy birthday to your son.
Oh, thanks so much, Bob. And say, you know, good wishes and best regards to everyone there. Keep up the faith. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you very kindly, and you have a great evening. Have a great gig tonight.
Oh, yeah. We'll be fine.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks so much now. We'll see you.
Bye. I love making new friends. John Kuntz, you heard several means of getting the record. Personally, and, you know, we get 1.276593 cents off of every sale at Amazon, but I would suggest, it's not out yet. Okay, you can't get it through Amazon yet. But I would suggest you order through his website, www.johnkuntz.com. That's JONKOONCE.com. You know, I don't know, do the credit card or drop a money order, a check in the mail. I'm not making any promises or anything, but I bet you John might even sign it. There I go. Speaking ex cathedra again. Tell you what, let's keep it rolling. Look, it's Wednesday. I get to filibobster on Wednesday, okay? Let's talk to Roy down in Texas. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
I'm glad to know it. We've got all our little bugs fixed, so maybe we can actually have a conversation this evening.
Okay, well, we tried yesterday, but we didn't make it, did we?
Not for want of trying.
We tried. Okay. Yeah, what I was getting on with there yesterday was the I'm a Steel, and of course that's all been resolved today, so I guess enough has been said.
Well, I see Imus as a skirmish in a larger battle, Roy. Because, as was noted a little bit earlier by another caller, he wasn't the worst of the right wingers by any stretch of the imagination.
Well,
and we've got to clean some of this up.
I agree to that, but you and I both know, and I'm sure a lot, lots, lots, lots of your listeners know, the Republicans, you know, that racist goes with the R in the front of their name.
Yeah, it's not as much a political party as it is a Clavern meeting.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, bring your own cross.
Yep.
I'm sorry, but time after time they've shown themselves to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't get over. I can't forget. I won't forget the jungle drums that beat in those commercials every time the name of Harold Ford Jr. was mentioned in the 2006 election cycle for the Senate race in Tennessee. This is what they do.
Well, but it's just, you know, they're all trying to act like God Almighty right the last few days. But it's just another one of those gimmicks to take the heat off of Bush's dumb ass and keep Iraq off of the, out of the airway. So it's just.
Well, we do have to remember to keep our eyes on the birdie.
I got you.
So, you know, because there's other stuff out there. Like I said earlier in the program, sometimes I focus on the big things. Other times there are smaller things closer at hand. I've got a story that I hope to hit later tonight that while it's just something out of West Virginia, everybody probably knows someone who has had something to this degree happen to them. It's a medical malpractice story.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got people in power in government, especially in the executive branch. There's a soundbite out there of George Bush describing a woman who had the wrong breast removed in a medical malpractice case. He described her as having won life's lottery, Roy.
Yeah. Well,
You know, what kind of pardon me, piss poor excuse for a human being describes a maimed individual as a winner of life's lottery?
Yeah, well, I tell you, you know, there's roughly 20% of the U.S. population. They're always, it wouldn't matter what, they're always going to be that Repub backer. But really and truly, when you've got close to 80%, I've seen a number the last few days, I've seen it several times, especially when I log on to my computer and it gives you the AOL poll and everything like that to do. 78% of the people are not listening to him. And it don't matter what he's getting up trying to push, say, they're not listening. And that's just the way it is.
But when they're not listening, Roy, I keep trying to figure out what that 78% of the people means. Have they given up? Are they on our side?
I have no idea.
I don't either, because you would think if 78% of the people, and you know, we're approaching that kind of a number, opposed this war, for instance.
Right.
You would expect people in the streets all over the country.
You would think so.
But I'm not seeing them, are you?
No.
It's a challenge to me. I have a hard time comprehending it.
Well, it's just like the little deal that I sent you the other day about him throwing the G.I. Joes in the cesspool. That story. You've seen it, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyhow, that's, you know, you send it out, and you get a few of them that's going to respond to you. No, and all that good stuff. But most of them, they just won't even reply. But you let one that come out that they can scream about Nancy Pelosi or Hillary or some other Democrat, man, they're going to flood you with it.
Well, and we saw that happen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, she wore a headscarf. Well, you know, so did Condi. So did Laura.
Okay, but another thing. Has media mentioned that Syria, just for a gesture that day toward Nancy Pelosi, they did release one of those Israeli prisoners that they had been holding?
You know, I didn't see that.
You didn't?
No, I did not.
It did happen. And,
well, I'm sure Newsmax is out there ready to publish a story that says, well, you know, there was a carrier steaming toward them. This is just craziness, and it's willfully repeated by the so-called professional media, Roy. That's what that's what makes me so frustrated.
Yeah, but just like Limbaugh, what all does he say, racist and everything like that?
Exactly.
But it's a great big double standard. But I promise you, that R goes right along in front of their names for racist, just like it does Republican.
You're darn right. Roy, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
You have yourself a great night now.
Goodbye.
Take care. Our good buddy Roy in Texas. Now, coming up, I hope, I think this is how I worked it out when everything went to caca last night. We should, in the 8 o'clock hour, be hearing from, and that's 8 o'clock Eastern, of course, should be hearing from our good friend Brad Friedman. He's, you know, Brad's been out there hammering away for as long as anyone else that I'm aware of about electronic voting. And we all, because you guys inform yourselves, because you stay up on these things, there's a lot of stories that I kind of let go by the boards because I make assumptions about what you are paying attention to. You know, this is not right-wing radio. This is not Republican radio. I don't have to give you your marching orders. I've said this before. So I assume that you go to bradblog.com. I assume that you know what he's been dealing with in terms of the Rush Holt electronic voting bill. This thing is in dire jeopardy from the standpoint of how it continues to treat these what have they been called? A threat to democracy machines. And now he is even being mischaracterized by what I had always considered to be a good progressive, good liberal organization in the form of People for the American Way. So I hope that Brad remembers, and I hope that he calls, and I hope that that happens, oh, about 5.5-6 minutes after the top of the hour. And, we'll have that conversation. A reminder for tomorrow evening. The other conversation that we had scheduled for last night when it all fell down was Anthony Lowenstein from Australia. And as a consequence, we didn't get to do it last night, but we will be talking to Anthony tomorrow evening. And if you want to sort of get up to speed on what we're going to be talking about, you can go to myisraelquestion.com. And see where he is coming from. Personally, I'd suggest that Anthony not make that lunch date with AIPAC and stay out of small aircraft. He's a brave man, and he writes a lot of truth, and he'll be on the program tomorrow evening. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. All active duty U.S. Army troops will be staying longer in Iraq. The Pentagon today extended the time they must serve to up to 15 months. That's 3 months longer than the current tour of duty. The extension applies to troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Defense Secretary Robert Gates called the decision difficult but necessary. Three top U.S. generals have so far declined to accept the newly created role as overseer of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The U.S. military says they have proof Iran has been training Iraqi insurgents in the assembly of roadside bombs. According to Major General William Caldwell, the bombs can pierce armor and are being manufactured and smuggled into Iraq. Coalition forces in Baghdad say they've captured a key insurgent suspect along with five others. The alleged militant leader, only identified as a security emir, is believed to have taken part in planning attacks on coalition troops. In the Algerian capital, Algiers, two bomb blasts have killed at least 23 people. One exploded in a government building, the second in a police station. A group associated with Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility. The North African city hasn't seen this kind of attack in more than a decade. North Korea says it won't be able to shut down its main nuclear reactor as promised on Saturday, but should be able to do so within 30 days. Both the U.S. and South Korea are questioning the delay, saying there's no reason not to shut the nuclear reactor down now. On Capitol Hill, Democrats have subpoenaed Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez for additional Justice Department documents. He has until Monday to turn them over, one day before he's to appear before a Senate panel to talk about the firings of 8 federal prosecutors. And possible Republican presidential candidate and former Tennessee Senator Fred Thompson has been diagnosed with a treatable form of lymphoma. The star of NBC's Law & Order said he is still taking steps towards a possible entrance into the presidential race. In East Timor, 70% of its presidential election ballots have been counted. Its 3 candidates remain too close to call. And in Georgia, a state computer disk containing personal information of nearly 3 million medical patients has been lost. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
NASA has postponed the launch of the Space Shuttle Atlantis until June. Scientists are continuing repairs on the ship, which was damaged in a hailstorm earlier this year. An Arizona astronomer says evidence of water has been discovered on a planet outside the solar system. Water vapor has been spotted in the atmosphere of a large gaseous planet 150 light years from Earth. The Associated Press reports that 13 young diabetics in Brazil have been successfully treated with their own stem cells. The patients have been able to live free from insulin shots, though experts stop short of calling it a cure. Home prices are expected to drop this year, according to the National Association of Realtors. The latest monthly forecast, the realtors say there will be a 0.7% decline in the median price of existing homes. Analysts say problems in the subprime mortgage market are to blame. And consumer confidence has plummeted to an 18-month low in April. Analysts cite high fuel prices, the threat of inflation, and concerns about a possible recession. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.01 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street today, all the markets were down. The Dow was down 89 points, the NASDAQ down 18, the S&P was down 10. And there's more, of course, at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Right here. 5.5 minutes after the hour. It's okay, Agnes. The streaming computer's going to be good to you now. See, we're all gun-shy now. We're all just paranoided out and afraid that... You know, look, the thing, what? The thing throws how many billions of calculations per second, and, you know, it zigs on 1-0 instead of a 1 instead of zagging, and we're screwed.
Bob, it's magic, and we don't talk about technical difficulties on the air.
Well, thanks,
please,
boss.
Refrain.
Sheesh. What a grouch. Oy. So, it's my understanding that Agnes is now hooking up with Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com fame.
That came out wrong.
okay, you're not... That came out wrong. No, she's not hooking up with Brad Friedman. Dr. Freud White, courtesy phone. Dr. Freud White, yeah, you're number one in my book too, Agnes. Oh, mercy. Brad, as usual, is on the road. I don't know if he knows what his own residence looks like anymore. This guy crisscrosses the country trying to salvage something as precious and essential and apparently treated as disposable as the right to vote. And like I've said before, bradblog.com is the single best resource I've run across for voting issues and the fight against voting machines. Brad, welcome to the program. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. How are you, my friend?
You know, I'm getting along. You know, every day above the ground's a good one.
No, well, that is good. I'm barely above the ground these days, but hanging in there.
Well, I just said a minute ago, I don't know if you would know your own residence if you drove up to it right now. You stay on the road so much.
Well, that's true. I am on the road more than I wish. But actually, I don't mind being on the road. I just wish I was able to take some time off when I was on the road. Instead, it's constantly working, and it seems almost a sure bet. As soon as I hit the road, a major story will break, as did happen today, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like the old gag about the guy who goes to judgment, winds up in hell, and he's given a choice. The first room, there's people standing knee-deep in caca, drinking coffee, and the other room, they're standing on their heads on a concrete floor, and they give him a choice. He says, I'll take the caca and the coffee. And so he gets his coffee, and the guy, and then a little bit later, the imp comes back in and says, coffee breaks over back on your heads. We kind of live that way, don't we?
Yes, we do.
But you're right. You just can't turn your back on the news cycle, can you?
No, it never stops, and particularly with this election stuff, it just keeps pounding away. We're really getting to a tipping point in many aspects of it. Today, you may have seen, and we've got full team coverage today at Bradblog on
team coverage.
Indeed. The EAC, the Elections Assistance Commission, has finally released a report that they had been keeping buried for months, that they commissioned on this supposed voter fraud nonsense, which is something that the Republicans have been out there pushing as some terrible voter fraud epidemic that we have in this country. And essentially they're doing it in order to be able to pass restrictive photo ID laws at the polls, which are really a way of keeping Democratic-leaning voters away from the polls, many of whom do not have photo ID. We're talking about the elderly and the urban dwellers and so forth. Anywhere from 10 to 30 million of those voters don't have photo ID. And, in fact, these sorts of restrictions have been found unconstitutional, and, in fact, they keep folks away from the polls. Well, the EAC, which has become the Elections Assistance Commission, which has become hopelessly partisan, had hoped to be able to put out a report that would show there is some epidemic of voter fraud in America. Well, what do you know? Their bipartisan report turned out to show that there is no such epidemic. It is not a major problem. It is extremely rare. And so what did the EAC do, as per George Bush and, you know, what his administration does? They buried the report. They put out a different one, changing the results of what it found.
Now, we've seen this before, haven't we?
We have. We've seen it with the global warming. We've seen it with intelligence reports. It's incredible. This is what they do when they don't...
What was the phrase? We were talking about the Downing Street memo last hour. What was that phrase? The facts were fixed to fit the intelligence?
That's exactly right. And that's what they're doing here. They're fixing the facts to try to support what they wish to believe is the case, despite all evidence to the contrary. What they're doing here is gaming your election system any way they can, and it's funny because all of these scandals now, Bob, seem to be converging. The U.S. attorney scandal, as you know, was based in no small part on the Bush administration tossing out attorneys who would not bring voter fraud cases after those, and they were Republican attorneys, mind you.
Yes.
Those Republican attorneys looked at it and found, oh, I can't bring a case because we've got no voter fraud here. And the thanks they got is that they were pushed out for apparently other Republican attorneys who wouldn't mind bringing voter fraud cases even when none existed. So it's all coming together. It's just an avalanche of information, and all the while, of course, Congress is moving forward with election reform legislation, which is going to be at this time disastrously inappropriate for what this country needs.
They're whistling past a graveyard, aren't they?
Well, they sure are, and you know they're looking at these dreadful touchscreen DRE, so-called direct recording electronic voting machines, generally touchscreen voting machines, and saying, oh, they'll be fine as long as we use a paper trail with them. Well, this has been proven time and time again not to be the case. They're dangerous. They're disenfranchising.
And by proven, we mean factually proven.
We mean factually proven by scientific studies, one after another. Virtually every computer scientist, professor in the world, not just the country, but in the world, says that these voting systems cannot be used safely in a democracy, that they're antithetical to democracy. And, what's worse here is that we've got, frankly, folks who should be the good guys, Democrats in Congress, and a lot of their public advocacy groups, like People for the American Way and Move On and so forth, who are supporting this legislation despite the fact that these voting machines can never be verified. You know, when you go to vote on one of these touchscreen machines, even if it has the so-called paper trail, the dirty little secret that almost, you know, most voters have no idea about, is that you can verify what's on that paper trail all day long if you want. But that paper trail is never counted in the election.
Because that is outside that, and that's outside the box itself, isn't it, Brad? That's a function of the way the enabling legislation is written.
Well, that's right. Well, what happens on the touchscreen systems is that it is the internal machine numbers that can never be verified by any human being. Those are the numbers that are actually used in the election results. So this whole paper trail business is a huge, whopping scam. It is meant to make voters, you know, believe that there is some sort of paper trail that anybody will ever pay attention to. They won't, and they don't. And what's worse here, Bob, is that the Democrats who are pushing this bill right now, Rush Holt in the House, particularly People for the American Way, PFAW, they know damn well that this is the case, and they're misinforming the American public about the legislation and about the dangers of DRE voting, which I find to be really reprehensible, particularly since these are the good guys, Bob.
Well, Brad, I'm a geek, okay? Yeah. And I don't mean like a good geek who really understands computers or anything. I'm a Luddite,
right?
At least where elections are concerned. I believe in paper ballots.
Yeah.
I believe in X's written on paper ballots, and paper ballots dropped in garbage cans, and or not, you know, the metal containers with the locks and the seals, and you take them to the county clerk's office, and little old blue-haired ladies who have been volunteering for the county clerk's office for 50 years then count the votes.
Yep.
That is, to me, an elegant system.
Not only is it elegant...
It's effective and it works.
It's
accurate.
And it's scientifically sound. I mean, you don't have to be a Luddite to think that this is a crazy way to vote. You've got the top computer science professionals, security professionals in the world who agree with you. This is not about being a Luddite. Look, I spent 10 years of my life as a computer software programmer, so I'm hardly a Luddite. It is, in fact, the people who know how these systems work, who are in the front lines telling people that you cannot vote this way. It is not safe to do so. So, it's not a Luddite argument, and the reason that word actually jumps out at me is because for years you had these voting machine companies who were saying that, it is Luddites. It is people who are afraid of computers who don't want to vote this way. They're just afraid of progress. Well, the people who understand progress better than anyone are the very folks who are saying, no, this is not the way you can safely count your vote in America.
I'm not afraid of progress, Brad. I'm afraid of being disenfranchised.
Yep, and you should be, because folks are disenfranchised. Look, in the 2006 election cycle alone, thousands, if not millions of voters were disenfranchised because of DRE touchscreen voting machines. When they break down, there is no way to cast a vote. Never mind the tampering on the systems, and they're very easy, as you know, I'm sure you've covered. They're very easy to tamper with, to flip votes with, and never leave a trace behind. But forget about that for a second. When you have touchscreen voting machines in your polling place and they fail to start up or they break down or they freeze up or anything, legally registered voters of all political parties, black, white, left, right, doesn't matter, cannot cast a vote. That's a problem, and that never happens when you're dealing with paper-based balloting systems, whether they're scanned by an optical scanner or counted by hand. You can at least go in and mark down your vote. And, you know, that's what I'm concerned about, I think, above and beyond anything, is because we saw in 2006 for the first time when these machines had really taken over the country, we saw election after election, week after week throughout the primaries and then into the general elections, when people were simply turned away from the polls because the machines had broken. That's a grave threat to our democracy, if you ask me.
Right, and without, you know, without the allegations of nefarious conduct.
What's that?
Without any allegation of nefarious conduct, just you know, the darn
That's
things
right.
break.
That's right.
Maybe I'm calling on you to speculate, and if I am, I apologize, Brad. What's behind the reasoning with Move On and People for the American Way? I think, as far as I could tell, Rush Holt started out very well-intentioned with this legislation.
I think he was well-intentioned with this legislation originally, and, you know, there was a lot of folks who supported it originally. He had proposed it in the last Congress. It was called H.R. 550 back then, and there were a lot of supporters for it who then got to 2006 and saw what happened and saw that, no, paper trails are not enough on these voting machines to make them safe. And, you know, so a lot of these folks like Voters Unite and Voter Action and Progressive Democrats of America, they realized the problem here and they changed their stance. They had previously been supporting the previous version of the bill and realized, no, we can't do that anymore. Now we must ban DRE touchscreen voting systems. But Rush Holt hung on to his old language and refused to make that change. He's since been using PFAW, and I can get into some of the nuances here, but there's a bit of a difference between PFAW, People for the American Way, and some of these other groups like Move On and Common Cause. I think Move On and Common Cause and Voters Unite, Vote Trust USA, they understand the dangers of DREs, but they're making the political calculation saying that, oh, if we call for a ban on DREs, then we won't be able to pass this legislation. Now, I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's true. I think that's misinformation coming out of Holt's office. Nonetheless, I think that's what they believe. People for the American Way, on the other hand, is another case. They know better. I've spoken to them. I've spoken to Ralph Neese, their executive director. I've spoken to David Becker, their lead election policy attorney. I've even spoken with Norman Lear, the founder of the organization,
yeah,
in person about this. And Neese and Becker, they know this issue real well. And the problem with them is they are not only against a ban on DREs, they are actually they are advocating for the use.
Well, pardon me for a moment, what the hell?
I know. I've been trying to figure out what the hell. I've called them on it.
They've gotten a little ugly with you about it.
It's real bad because I've said to them, look, guys, you know, I'd like to believe you have the best interests of democracy in mind here. and I understand you have a point of view different than mine. All I'm asking is, what is your science to back up your position that DRE voting systems are superior to paper-based optical scan systems? And here's the news, Bob. They've got no science. They've got nothing, and they're sticking to it. And I'm not going to speculate as to why. You know, various folks have suggested, you know, nefarious reasons and so forth. But
somebody's,
you know,
invested in somewhere, and yeah.
Well, look, if you know the work that I do on BradBlog, I only report things that I can not only prove myself, but that I can allow you to independently verify on your own. I tell people all the time, don't trust me. I am not to be trusted. Now, I wish they held that same standard against the New York Times and the Washington Post and the AP,
yeah,
to make them, you know, prove their, what they're reporting and allow us to independently verify what it is they're reporting. When I report something, you can do that. So that's a long way of saying I don't know the reasons for their, you know, why they're actually pushing this dangerous technology on America. If there is a nefarious purpose, I have not yet found it. Right now, it seems to me, it's still a mystery for the moment, and I am extraordinarily puzzled and deeply troubled by them simply being wrong on this topic and being unwilling to do anything about it. And now they're making matters worse because they're lying about things that they know to be the case on their website. They're putting out disinformation, and worse still, they're using my name now to do it, Bob.
Oh, that's no good.
They've got my name quoted in the very top of their FAQ, their frequently asked questions, saying that why is Brad Friedman disagree with you guys? And they say, well, Brad Friedman and we all agree that paper trails are necessary on voting systems. That is not true. I don't agree with paper trails. Paper trails on DRE systems make things worse, not better. And it's absolutely outrageous that they would use my name to promote their agenda in that way, and they've refused to change it, Bob.
This is bizarre, Brad. Forgive me, and I'm not trying to be overly flip, but I've read as much of this as I could get my eyes across. And if you'll forgive me saying so, their position reminds me of something that I experienced 20-25 years ago. You remember the people who bought Betamax video cassette players?
Sure.
Hung on to those Betamaxes until there were no movies out to be watched anymore.
Right.
I get a certain sense looking at this issue that their position vis-a-vis touchscreen machines are kind of like people who we were right. It's a better format. We think it's, and we can have a paper trail. And they're not going to back down for science. They're not going to back down for reason. They're not going to back down for common sense. They've developed some sort of irrational attachment to these things.
I'll give you perhaps even a better metaphor, because the beta versus VHS metaphor is not perfect in that beta actually was a better technology.
It was better, but...
But I'll give you a better metaphor. I will compare it to the Bush administration. They went out with this Iraq nonsense, and, let's even stipulate that they actually thought that Iraq was a threat and was in bed with Al-Qaeda and so on and so forth originally. Okay? As later it came out, it was shown beyond a shadow of a doubt that they were absolutely wrong. Never mind if they lied or not, but they were wrong. But instead of doing anything about it, instead of changing the course, they continued what they were doing, and they compounded the error that they made in the first place by lying about it, by changing scientific reports, by misleading the American public about it. That is, I'm sorry to say, precisely what PFAW is now doing in their support of these touchscreen machines. They may have had a perfectly good reason for thinking they were a good way to go originally. A lot of people did. But now that the facts have contradicted them, they are afraid to change their position, and they are willing to go out, say anything, and apparently do anything to mislead the public to support their position rather than coming out and saying, you know what, we were wrong.
And instead of being science-based, fact-based, it has become an article of faith and dogmatic and doctrinaire.
That's right. And they've got, if you look at it, they've got no science to back it up. They're playing fast and loose with words in order to try and trick people. And it's, you know, when we're talking about democracy here, it's particularly reprehensible what they're doing. But the point of these, you know, that underscores this entire fight is that with democracy, you should never have to trust anyone. Our system is built on checks and balances, not built on trust and faith. And you should be able to, any citizen in the world ought to be able to go in, if you have a question about an election, go in and determine for yourself with your own eyeballs if it was accurately tabulated or not. That's not a very tall, you know, a very high bar to be able to pass. And yet that's what this is all about, and it becomes literally impossible to do so when you're dealing with the systems that they're talking about. And when you get into an area where you're saying, hey, trust me, these are all going to work out just fine, you know something has gone terribly wrong, because that is, again, antithetical to our democracy. It's not about trust and faith. It's about being able to see exactly what's going on, transparency, so that we can have faith in our democracy no matter who wins.
Well, Brad, I know you're not one prone to just put down the gloves and walk away.
No, I wish I was.
Is this a foregone conclusion? Is this a juggernaut whose inertia cannot be stopped?
Not if I have anything to say about it, and not if your listeners and the American citizens rise up and do what needs to be done here. Look, this is our democracy. We got into the mess that we're in, whether it's for our voting systems or Iraq or anything else, by staying quiet and allowing the people, you know, up in the ivory towers, if you will, up in D.C. to make decisions about the course of our country. We can change this. They are hearing us in Congress and at places like PFAW, but the noise needs to be a hell of a lot louder. And so, if it's a two-line email, I am begging your listeners today to take 30 seconds and write an email to PFAW@PFAW.org and tell them to stop misleading the American public about election reform and to stand for the voters and not the voting machine companies. You've got to make your voice heard, and I'll tell you, and call your congressman, write your congressman, do the same thing. I'm telling you, they pay attention. I've seen this firsthand. When they get buried with these emails, they pay attention to this. And PFAW has extraordinary power right now. They are controlling this debate in D.C., and as long as they refuse to change their position, it's going to be very difficult to change the course of this legislation. If they come out and do the right thing, however, all bets are off, and we could see legislation that does what we need to happen, which is to ban DRE voting systems. But it's going to take the people, it's going to take the listeners. Please, I'm begging your listeners, don't count on anyone else to do this. Do it yourself. 30 seconds. Just say PFAW. Do the right thing about democracy. Change your position. If you write them one line that long, it will, I promise, make a difference. So no.
PFAW@PFAW.org. Org. Okay.
That's PFAW, People for the American Way. It will, I promise, make a difference. And so no, there's no juggernauts that we can't stop, Bob. And this one is too damn important. We can't go into a third presidential election in a row where we may come out questioning the outcome. I'd suggest American democracy can't stand that.
Yeah, it's too much weight to bear. Where is, excuse me, Brad? Where is the Rush-Holt legislation in terms of committee, subcommittee, on the floor? What?
Well, it's fast tracking. It's in the House Administration Committee right now. It's about to be marked up and then approved by the committee and sent to the House floor for a vote. Now, they were going to go to the markup was supposed to happen just before the Easter recess, And there was a holdup. Now, there's a lot of speculation as far as why that holdup occurred. Some have said it's due to all of the complaints that they're getting, so that's why I want to underscore it. You know, call your congressman and demand they ban touchscreen voting and don't pass this Holt bill as is. But they're going to come back from the break next week. It's supposed to go into markup and be approved by the committee and then sent to the House floor for a vote. So this is moving quite quickly, and a Senate bill is happening on the Senate side. Dianne Feinstein is going to be introducing a matching bill. So we really need to hit up Dianne Feinstein as well to tell her to do the right thing. They want to move this quickly. They need to move this quickly in order to affect election reform for the 2008 election. There's a lot of good stuff in that bill, Bob. I should say, I worked on that bill. As it was being developed, they were sharing drafts with me and asking for input, and I was able to get a lot of important stuff into that bill, banning voting machine sleepovers, more transparency for citizen oversight, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of important stuff in that bill. I would like to see it passed, but not unless it's amended to remove the use of these dangerous DRE systems. So, you know, I'm glad in one sense that it's moving forward, but it's got to move forward quickly in order to be done in time for the 08 elections, and the only way the provisions of that bill can be met in time for the 08 elections is if they remove DRE technology from the bill, because we've got op-scan systems, optical scan systems that use paper ballots that are good to go tomorrow and will meet the provisions of the Holt bill. But if you're going to use DREs, they're not going to meet it in time. There's going to be a huge song and dance. All of these systems are going to have to go back through federal certification by who? The EAC.
It all comes full circle, doesn't it?
Yep.
Are there any members of Congress, any senators who are supportive of the situation as you would have it, as you describe it, working, you know, what I would call our side of the street?
Yeah, actually there are, and there are some Congress members, who are both on the committee and others who may be able to do this once it comes to the floor, who may be able to bring a DRE ban amendment to the bill. However, you've got huge forces right now working against it, notably, as I say, the Holt's office themselves and People for the American Way, who are putting out all sorts of misinformation about this, and they're saying that, if we include a DRE ban, we could never get it passed in Congress. Well, guess what? I've spoken to all sorts of offices in Congress, in the Senate and in the House. Not a single one of them has said to me that they would not vote for the bill if it included a DRE ban. And yet, that's the word that they're putting out on the street. Oh, we couldn't get this passed if it had a DRE ban. And further proof that they're willing to say anything and do anything in order to get their legislation passed.
Just as a matter of curiosity, is there a when we talk about the DREs, does there remain a principal manufacturer, or are all the companies involved in these things?
All four of the major companies make them. That would be Diebold, ES&S, Sequoia, and Hart Intercivic. And every single one of their machines has now been proven to be easily tamperable, easily hackable, and, as I said earlier, simply break down on election day so that people can't vote. That's the problem. So it's all of the manufacturers.
And the optical scans have a higher reliability rating or quotient than what you just described?
Well, here's the difference. Excuse me. Essentially, when an optical scan system breaks down, let's say it's precinct-based optical scan, so you might have... let's say you have 10 different voting stations when you go to vote there where you can mark on your paper ballot, and they might have one optical scan system. When you're done voting, you bring the paper over, you run it through the op scan system, and it tabulates your paper ballot that you've marked with your own hand. Now, if that machine breaks down, people can still vote. The ballot can be scanned later when they fix the machine, or it can be centrally scanned at the county, so people are not disenfranchised. However, op-scan systems can also be gamed, meaning they can be tampered with, they can be hacked. If you saw HBO's Hacking Democracy,
right.
an election was flipped using an optical scan system.
Well, that's why I'm a little bit, yeah. I'm a little, you know, again, paper, pencil,
well,
box.
The difference is, yeah, what the whole bill does have is mandates in there for auditing those ballots. So if you tabulate them with an op-scan system, yes, that op-scan system can be gamed, and that's why you need to do appropriate audits of a certain number of those paper ballots to determine that you've, with 99% certainty, that the reports as results as reported are correct. But you can do that with a paper-based system because you know you've actually got the ballots that people voted on, and you can check to ensure that the voter intent...
Physical evidence of the franchise.
That's right. And you don't have that with these electronic touchscreen systems, which tabulate your vote inside the box. Even if you're Superman, you can't see.
I got my electrons here.
That's right. That's the difference. And look, I'm not even saying that OpScan is the best way to go, although the fellow who actually hacked that OpScan, Diebold OpScan system in the film Hacking Democracy is a computer security expert, Harry Hursty. And I spoke with him last week. I interviewed him for about 6 or 7 hours, and he said without a question that optical scan systems are the safest, most transparent way to carry out an election in this country. And he's got some, you know, conditions on the type of op scan, and we begin to get down in the weeds because there are different types of op scan. But
sure.
The main point is that you've got a physical record of the vote that's been marked by the hand of the voter, so you can determine what their intent was. And then when it comes to disabled voters, and this is one of the reasons why they're pushing these DRE systems, a lot of disabled voters, blind and disabled voters, need an electronic touchscreen system in order to be able to vote privately and independently, and that's fine. But there are touchscreen systems that are not DREs, that do not directly record electronically the vote. All they do is they produce a paper ballot. They're called ballot marking devices. They spit out a piece of paper that has the voters' choices marked on the ballot. And then that paper ballot is counted by another means, by OpScan or by hand or whatever. So when you hear this argument that they love to use that, oh, disabled voters need these DREs, nonsense. Disabled voters need touchscreen interfaces to help them cast their vote. They don't need systems that actually disenfranchise them by creating a vote that they can not verify in any way, shape, or form. Does that distinction make sense?
It makes a boatload of sense. In terms of things to do now, pressure on the House Administration Committee, pressure on your individual senators as they prepare to introduce that legislation on that side of the Congress, and communication to PFAW, PFAW, at PFAW.org.
That's right. And I think you hit all of the bases there. You've got to make noise.
And stay up to date by being by popping by Bradblog every day.
Well, you got to go to Bradblog.com. That's the best.
By the way, love the new look.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I really do. It's about 1,000 times more readable now.
Well, thank you. A lot of folks who miss the old green and yellow, however, will be happy to know there's a selection. You can choose that, and you can get any color you want now. So,
any flavor you like.
We are pro-choice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, no Henry Ford. No. You can have any color you want as long as it's black.
That's right. You can have it both ways at the Brad Blog, but what you can't have it both ways on is your democracy. You know, and if you want to get to 2008 and watch another election like we saw in Florida 2000, Ohio 2004, what we're seeing still down there in Sarasota, Florida in 2006.
Yeah, because that's not over.
That is not over, not by a long shot, and there's nothing in this whole bill that keeps us from having exactly those same situations again in 2008. And, you know, people love to yell and bitch and scream and everything else after the election. The time is not to, you don't wait until after the election, because we know it's too late to change these results after the election. You've got to get it right on election night, and that's what this is about. And in order for that to happen, people cannot sit around and wait for someone else to do this. They've got to realize that this is their democracy. This is we the people. And we have got to stand up and make sure that they get this thing right this time, because they've screwed it up in the past. They screwed it up in 2002 with the Help America Vote Act. And this bill is going to be our only chance for many years to come to get this thing right. And if they don't ban DREs, essentially they are institutionalizing this way of voting for years and years to come. And
the DRE will, and the people who make them won't give up on them, and eventually, okay, I guess this is my paranoid little moment. Eventually, they will be. There's a risk of those becoming the dominant the voting device in the country.
Oh, there's no question about it. Elections officials love them. It makes their life much easier. They don't want all the paper. They don't want to have to do the work of counting them. They love to be able to push the button at the end of the day, get their numbers, and go home. Elections officials love these systems, with a few exceptions. And there are, you know, some heroic elections officials out there. Ion Sancho down in Florida, Bruce Funk up in Utah, who was pushed out of a job for daring to, you know, allow individuals to come in and test these machines, and found, by the way, that they were hackable. Deborah Bowen, Secretary of State out in California. These guys get it. And, you know, they'll tell you we cannot vote on these systems, and yet the great majority of elections officials and secretaries of state all want to use these machines, and they've got a lot of money to lobby Congress and to push for these continual use of these systems. And that's why we have got to stop this. We've got to nip it in the bud. We are definitely, David, up against Goliath here. But I will remind you that David won in the end, didn't he?
He did indeed. And one last question, Brad. Where does vote by mail fall in with this entire process?
Well, a lot of folks think that, oh, vote by mail is the solution because I have a paper ballot. And the problem is that they don't realize that when you vote by mail, your ballots are also scanned by electronic technology, by optical scan systems. Now, at least there's a paper ballot, but what you don't know is whether the ballot actually gets there and actually gets counted. So it's much better to vote on Election Day if you can. They think that we don't have problems and concerns with those paper ballots. We do, and in fact, voter fraud, such that it does exist, and it's, as we discussed at the beginning of this hour here, it's very, very rare, but such that it does exist, it exists mostly via absentee voting and people gaming that system. And it's very hard to track those absentee votes, because what they do is they go in and the county just scans them straight into the central tabulator at the county level. Whereas if you vote at the polls on Election Day, you've got a way to track it. In other words, when you go to the poll, they know at the poll that, you know, 237 people voted that day, and that there must be 237 ballots that are counted and it gets scanned right there at the precinct, hopefully. So it's sort of decentralized. With these absentee ballots, you don't have those controls. Everything sort of goes into a single pot, and it's very, very difficult to track absentee balloting. So vote by mail, a lot of people see it as a solution to this problem. It is not, unless you are in a state where your only choice, you know, several states have only touchscreen voting. If that's the case, then, yeah, you are better off voting by mail. But otherwise, get to the polls on Election Day, put your mark on a piece of paper, and insist that that paper ballot gets counted on election night. That's the only thing that
is
going to
happen. And start working now.
Yes, sir. Right now. You know, I get busy every 2 weeks before the election is when, you know, Newsweek and Time and New York Times decide they want to start running stories on this stuff before it's, you know, when it's way too late to do anything about it. Now is the time, and unfortunately, right now, it's the good guys that we're going to have to hold their feet to the fire to get this right. The Democrats in Congress and their supporters like PFAW, Move On, Common Cause, and so forth, but particularly PFAW, because they really seem to be controlling the debate in D.C., let them know to knock it off.
Right now, vote early, vote often.
That's it.
Hey, Brad, thanks so much. I always enjoy our conversations. And, you know, I know how hard you work. I know we joke a little bit and stuff, but it's awfully damn valuable what you're out there doing.
I appreciate it, my friend. Let's do it more often. Look, whenever I come on your show, that's the only way I get to take a break from sitting around and blogging. So I'm always glad to come on and yak about it with you.
All right, we'll make it happen more frequently.
Thanks, brother.
Great you take care, time. Brad.
All righty.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. Okay, there's the PFAW at PFAW.org, PFAW at PFAW.org. Let them know that you don't want the stinking touchscreen machines anywhere near your elections. One or two lines. But let yourselves be heard. You're sitting by, you're listening on the computer, you're sitting by a computer, write the damned email now, okay? Next, contact members of the House Administration Committee. Tell them that touchscreen machines of any form are not acceptable in the Rush-Holt bill. Tell your senators that it's not acceptable. Because, and see, this is one of the problems that we face on our side. We had 12 years, more or less, of a Republican Congress, and they can screw up a lot in 12 years. We've had 7 years of the George W. Bush administration. They've screwed up a lot. There's, you know, thank God that there are people out there working on the election issue. Thank God there are people out there working on environmental issues. Thank God there are people out there working on civil rights issues. But you know what? Those are all of our issues. Election issues are environmental issues. Environmental issues are civil rights issues. Okay? And it is your job, if you choose to accept it, Mr. and Mrs. Phelps, to make those your issues. This issue is worth an email. This is worth contacting your senators. This is worth contacting your member of Congress. This is worth contacting the House Administration Committee. This is worth sending a brief note to PFAW to ask them to please get it right. Okay? Please? Pretty please? I don't want to cry or anything. Let's go to Susan calling from Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Just real quick, I was typing frantically to Agnes while Brad was on the, while you were talking to Brad, by VBM, I was not talking about absentee. I'm talking about...
No. He understood that, but I think he made it clear that, you know, unless your only alternative is using a DRE, that voting on election day is much more likely to be reliable. Because they do still get scanned at you know, that.
Yes. Well, all paper ballots are scanned eventually. I did some checking on this because I got paranoid. Yes, they are scanned electronically. In Columbia County here, they're scanned on an ES&S machine that is not hooked up to any network.
Right.
There is no Diebold machine allowed anywhere within 200 yards of the building. They don't like Diebold at all.
Good.
The ballots are kept for 2 years in a presidential election. They can go back and physically count them if there is any question at all. But before they count them, the most telling thing occurs. Every envelope has to be signed in order to be counted. And they go in and they match the signature on that envelope. And it takes a lot of people to do this. They match the signature on that envelope
to the signature on the voter rolls.
You bet. We have very, very little voter fraud.
I guess I am old-fashioned, Susan, because we have so-called early voting here in West Virginia. You know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, before the election, and you can go by and vote. Mm-hmm. I've never done that to this day. I was raised to get up on election day and haul my little carcass down to the polling place and go vote. And I like the physical interplay of it.
Well, what they do here is...
Because the post office still loses mail.
Yeah, you can go down, you can mail it, or you can hand carry it in. Now, what I do is I sign my little goodie, snip it up, and then toddle down to the county seat, and then put it in the little slot and say, bam, it's done.
Yep. Well, I think the bottom line, for obviously where Brad was concerned, the bottom line is getting the touch screens the hell out of our franchise.
Oh, yeah, I agree with him. The touch screens need the Carry Nation treatment, an axe.
You know, a few people did that this last election. I think they're still facing felony charges.
Well, if it was made legal, let's face it, Carry Nation had the, you know, after they passed the amendment outlawing alcohol, she could go in and do it, so she did it.
Yeah. Oh, I think about all that poor beer. But that's just me.
Well, I agree with you.
Susan, yeah. Thanks so much, dear.
You too. You have a nice night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And quickly to our good friend David in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Sorry, there's not much time left.
Yeah, that's all right. I was watching All the King's Men anyway.
Hey, the new one?
Yeah, with Sean Penn.
What do you think?
It's really impressive. The director, the writer, the guy who did Schindler's List.
Yeah.
And
because that's my favorite book in the in the American English lexicon.
Is it?
Yeah, by Robert Penn Warren. It's a real onion. There's more layers than you can even think about on the first pass through.
Yeah, that's what they say about it. That's what they say about this novel. So you're dead on about that.
That and Catch 22 by Joseph Heller. I'm still figuring out what that thing's about.
Right.
But you like the movie?
Yeah, it was really good. Sean Penn is always really interesting, and the extras are really, you know, you got about over an hour of extras.
The only thing I couldn't figure out about it, and this is only based on my reading, certainly not my viewing. The only thing I couldn't figure out about it, David, is what compunction drove them to reset the period in it.
I think part of it is because there have been remakes before, and they wanted to see what they could do with alter it and see if the basic structure and the template, and if it matters if you set it in a different time period, and what you come across is it doesn't matter much. It's, you know, it has to do with story, style, and the substance of what we're all dealing with.
How long has it been out? I stay so busy I don't even think about these things. I'm so glad you mentioned it. I got to go rent it.
It's been out about 2 weeks, I think, now.
Yeah, I might be able to sneak down to the local gas station and see if they've got it. You know, next there, right there, sitting right there next to Porky's, you know, 16 or whatever.
Well, I just called to mention one thing. For everybody to look at churchacrossamerica.com. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that thing. Oh, my God.
Bob, I'm serious.
Pure genius.
I know. He is. And here's the thing. I really think that you could get him to do a segment on Head On every Wednesday because he seems like a go-getter. I mean,
I'm gonna write to him because, among other things, in his blackboarding, and we're sort of assuming that people are going to go to churchacrossamerica.com, he quotes our buddy Dr. Ehrman a bunch.
Yeah, and one of the things he does that a lot of satirists don't do, or comedians that are on the internet, he actually goes out and participates with the real evangelical.
No, I know. I saw, like I said.
Right on the sidewalks, or he goes, I'm not talking about pro. I'm talking about con. or why? He goes, I can guarantee you 7 days without dying. 7 days. And he takes his.
It's
days.
Genius. What's the guy's name again?
Iman Lariton.
Yeah.
Another thing. Before I go, another thing is he has a site called YouHaveBadTasteInMusic.com. And basically, he went out with a megaphone. I mentioned this before on the show. He goes out with a megaphone and tells people why Nickelback is bad, why Creed.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me.
Yeah, I mean, but he explains it. I mean, people, you have to go to Church Across America. Bob is right on this. I mean, I wouldn't send it to Bob if I didn't think. I mean, this guy could literally have a segment on here, and he would probably do it for free too.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to make contact with him.
Well, I think it's a good one. I mean, he gets his site hits up there, and he definitely gets a buzz every time he puts some kind of conceptual project up on the web.
Well, I tell you what, you've hit a couple of nails squarely on the head. We got a roll, David, but thanks so much.
All right, you keep it going, head on.
Later.
All right, later.
Bye now. ChurchAcrossAmerica.com, this being prayer meeting, it would be worth your while to go have a look. There's some genius going on there. A lot of hard work, too. Agnes, of course, produced the program tonight. And we're just glad she did. We're not going to say anything about hanging up on guests or anything. Right, right. Brian Reznor announces John Fox Engineers. All of this goes out over our stream and our podcasts and our archives because of the hard work of the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, at WhiteRoseSociety.org. I don't know if you've been by in a while, but the little thermometer thingy for the fundraiser just isn't moving. And I'm not going to get mean or anything, but if this matters to you, I know everybody's got their hands out, but if this matters to you, you got to support Ben, all right? Please? Many thanks to our moderators in the chat room. If you've never been to the chat room, you simply must go. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. Many thanks to our news ninjas. Adding a new member today, a new ninja. Hiya. Okay, that's the best I can do there. Our good friend ELO, also a mod in the chat room, becoming part of the world's most exclusive email list. And everything on this network happens because there are several thousand members of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights who go out every day and build the American dream. And by building the American dream, they're saving the American dream. And in saving the American dream, well, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Run over to johnkoonce.com, johnkoonce.com. Pick up a copy of It Can Never Happen Here. I promise you, you will be glad you did. And always... always, always. RMR, it's all for you.
Web of terrorism. McCain draws heat from Vet Group and Club for Growth. World may get greener, then wilt, due to warming. Israel not enthusiastic about strike on Iran, says Olmert. And Al-Qaeda number 3 says he's planned 9/11 and a hell of a lot of other things. Oh, we're going to rip into this one, folks. These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now. Huh.
live from Studio 19 in Arizona, it's Jeff Allen Wolf, again on the Venture 3 Radio Network.
And a big hello to all the Wolfpack listeners out there joining us in Studio 19 in Arizona, live, streaming worldwide, and here in Arizona, beautiful Arizona, overlooking the Superstition Mountains. Samantha, as always, my producer here with us, and our intern Maverick is here again. And to all the Wolfpack listeners, oh, I am so ripe. I wanted to do this show for you again yesterday after my show. When this news came in, I was so... I read the headlines on Yahoo.com.